What's up, fools? Welcome to the Smoking Tire Podcast. This episode of the show is brought to you by Beeline Coffee. Beeline is, God, it's good. Every time I try a different coffee, and people know I like coffee, so they send me other coffees and stuff, I just go, this is not as good as Beeline Coffee. And it's so good because me, my coffee nerdness, I've worked with them in Florida where they do their roasting, and we've created the Roasted Tire 3.0, which I think is the perfect coffee blend. It's not cheap, but it's single origin. It is a perfect roast. It's medium body. It's medium roast, medium flavor, but a lot of caffeine. It's good for the mornings. It's got such a good flavor. The Roasted Tire 3.0 can be identified from our previous roasts because it has the Lamborghini Countach on it. The 2.0 had the Porsche. 1.0 had the Mustang. And if you use code TST at the Beeline Coffee store, beelinecoffee.com. Any size order, big or small, whether it's 1 pound, 10 pounds, or an annual subscription, I'll give you 15% off your total order at Beeline Coffee. That's code TST at beelinecoffee.com, and I'll give you 15% off your whole order. You should really try it. If you love coffee, I mean, I realize not everyone is as big of a coffee nerd as I am, but a cup of coffee is how I start every single morning, and it's just so nice to have a really good quality cup of coffee. And if it's just you, a pound lasts quite some time. You know, it's a little more expensive, but it does last a while. So beelinecoffee.com, code TST, 15% off. Also, haven't promoted them in a while, but Dylan Optics sunglasses, the official eyewear of the Smoking Tire. A lot of people ask me about them. I'm always wearing my Dylans. Wherever I go, people think my glasses are fogged up or whatever. The matte finish is not just indicative of standing out in the crowd. It's not just a different look. That the glass in Dylan Optics is so good. It's like HD life. It's so clear and crystal. It's polarized. It's anti-reflective. And they have those matte finish lenses in all different colors. There's silver, black, green, gold, blue, and I think they've got red coming out this year. They've got the aviator style frames. They've got the plastic wraparound style frames. There's bigger frames, smaller frames. And if you go to thesmokingtire.com and click on the partners tab, I wish there was a better way to do it than that, but it's one extra click. Go to thesmokingtire.com, click on the partners tab. There's the Dylan Optics banner right there. If you use that link to order a pair of Dylan Optics, I will send you a free Smoking Tire t-shirt just for supporting the people who support the show. Again, go to thesmokingtire.com. Click on the partners tab, and there's the Dylan Optics banner. Use that to get to their website. It tracks back to us, and we know to send you a free t-shirt with every pair of Dylan Optics sunglasses ordered. All right, then. On this episode of the program, one of my favorite guests in from the UK. It is always a treat to have him. Richard Porter is in studio. You may remember him as being the head script writer on Top Gear UK. He's also the head script writer on the Amazon series, The Grand Tour. He is the author of How to Be a Motoring Journalist by Roy Lanchester, a fictional work of a parody, and also wrote And On That Bombshell, a behind-the-scenes look at Top Gear. He's a funny guy. It's a great show. We love having him here. It's on vacation. We recorded this one on Christmas Eve, but here he is, Richard Porter of The Grand Tour on the Smoking Tire Podcast. All right. Smoking Tire Podcast. Hello, everyone. It's Christmas motherfucking Eve. And guess what we're doing? We're working today. It's a work day for us, sort of.
Is this his work, is it?
Yeah.
I
don't know. It depends. It depends. The definition of work will be, do we get super chat money? If we get paid, then it's work. And if not, it's a hobby.
You're cutting me in for what? 50%? 60%?
Yep. Yeah. Yep. That's just like you cut me in on all those Grand Tour royalties.
I have a bone to pick with you about the Grand Tour.
Why, that I don't love the show?
Yeah, because I've heard you. Every time I listen to your show in the car and you're slagging off, I'm like, I can't wait to see
Farrah. I'm sorry.
I'm going to take it up with Farrah.
It doesn't mean I don't like you.
I took it extremely personally.
I'm sure you did. Me, all the people who've ever said they don't like things you've worked on, I'm sure you take very personally.
No, everyone loves everything that I've ever worked
for. Don't recognize the voice, that is Mr. Richard Porter. Welcome, sir.
Hello.
Script editor? Is it technically script editor of Grand Tour? You were of Top Gear. What are you?
Yes, I still am. Yeah.
Script editor. Yeah. And Mr. the man behind Sniff Petrol, as well as the new Smith and Sniff channel on YouTube, which we can't play any videos of because of copyright infringement rules.
Really? But it's my copyright, surely.
I know, but the software doesn't. The software will tell me to go fuck myself.
Gosh darn, there's
even if you're like, it's okay, the software's like, no, it isn't.
Really?
That's just how shit works. That's how shit works. And now, script editor of the Grand Tour. Good to see you again, man.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
I'm happy
me back.
To have you here.
I basically just invited myself on your show on Christmas
You did what I hope everyone that I like does, which is to say, I'm coming to town, and do you want to do something? Which I hope they do that. Because I don't follow your schedule. I don't know that you're in town. And I'm not going to bug you about coming on the show when I think you're in fucking England.
Well, yeah, and I'm here, technically, I'm on holiday, but, I mean...
So am I.
You know, I find it a bit weird if you come to a city where you know people and you don't tell them you're coming.
Yeah.
I've got too many people to try and see now.
You also have I understand your profession, and so if you came here for work, I know what that work schedule looks like, and I would not be mad if you didn't call.
Yeah. Yeah, actually, the last time I was here, it was for work, because we'd shot the big opening for the Grand
Tour
season one.
Well, I went to. I didn't go to the opening, I went to the first tent.
You came to the first tent show. I'd forgotten about that,
yes. And now the news is the tent is gone.
The tent is gone.
It's available
for weddings and bar mitzvahs, though.
If I'm honest, that was what I didn't love about the show.
Yeah, I think a lot of people...
I've said that before. I like the films, but I didn't think the tent was working, and now the tent is gone.
A long, long time ago on Top Gear, when we started getting a lot of people saying that their favorite things were the specials, you know, the big self-contained road trips, and which were usually sort of longer than an hour, or they were two parts or two 1 hours. So, and I remember having a conversation with our executive producer and going, why don't we just do specials all the time and ditch the studio?
Yeah.
And it was kind of... It was a dumb thing to do, because obviously without the studio, that suddenly a lot of my work is gone. But on the other hand, I'm quite lazy.
You know
lazy.
What you don't need? Me.
Yeah, it really was. Permission to go outside and shoot myself in the head, Sam. But because I am quite idle, I was just like, I've had enough. And at those days, it was always like, oh, God, because I used to have to do all the... I used to call it grouting. You know, where you grout between tiles?
Yeah.
Well, I used to call it the grouting on the script, because it was all the little bits that need filling in.
Right.
Because if they weren't there, they'd be missed. But that were
and the terms site. You used were links.
Yeah, which but were... then within the links, the grouting was stuff like, okay, every week we need a Stig introduction. We need a guest introduction. We need some menu items.
Oh, the some says.
The some says, the, okay, now it's time to put a star on a reasonable price card, la, la, la. And at the beginning of the show, there was always that tonight, and then there'd be three... Probably quite stupid things that matched a bit of VT, which we called the menu. And I used to have to do all that, and I just got a bit bored of it. So I said, why don't we just do specials? And Andy, our exec, said, no, you can't do a whole series of specials. It'd be too much.
Yeah.
You need the light and shade of the studio. And in a way, he was right, but now he's decided that he's not so right that he isn't going to do exactly
that. Well, something happened. I don't know what it was. What happened... What changed when you went from the Top Gear studio to the Grand Tour tent? Something about the vibe changed.
I guess it had a different feel because...
The first season, from an audience perspective, there was a lot of what seemed to be like insider... the BBC owns this IP, so we're going to do the exact opposite of this IP or like some subversive undercutting of that IP.
Yeah.
And I was kind of like, as a viewer, like, all right, we get it. You can't do this thing, so you did this thing that's not the thing. It's like Elon's not a flamethrower. You did a bunch of those.
I'm not looking. Bloody hell, there's Brad Pitt over there. Don't look.
Yeah,
look.
And like we have to have a celebrity, but we don't, let's murder him. Instead of talking to him.
That went down like a jar of sick, didn't it? Which I was a bit disappointed about, because it was my idea. And what happened was, we were in a meeting. We spent a lot of time in meetings trying to figure out, you know, like you're saying, trying to get around IP stuff.
Yeah.
And then we were in a meeting, and there were two things that we were discussing. And one was, why aren't we making use of the space outside? We had no plans to make any use of that area that you can see through the windows in the tent.
Yeah.
And secondly, one of the things on the agenda was, how are we going to get around the fact we're not having guests?
Mm-hmm.
And as an idle throwaway, mostly just a joke in the room, I went, why don't we have guests arriving outside and every week they get run over or attacked by a lion or something like that?
In the room, then, that sounds funny.
I know. That's all it was meant for, was a room joke. You know what it's like when you're brainstorming and stuff like that? The room jokes, where you're just trying to keep everyone's spirits
up. It does
up.
Sound funny in the room.
Well, also, it would have been funny if you'd shot it like a VT, as in sort of, you know, shot it so that it wasn't live in front of an audience.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because then you could have really gone to town with stunt people and dummies and all sorts of stuff and made it really spectacular. Because what happened was, I made it as a room joke, and then we carried on talking, and then Jeremy put his hand up and went, stop, everyone. I can't get past what Porter just said. And we went back to it, and he went, I think this is a really good idea. Let's do it. And it sort of went from there. And the next thing, we're doing,
nine of them.
Nine of them. But I was just hamstrung by not being able to. I mean, we looked into, I wanted one of them to just be someone walks out and then, like, a massive bus drives by. just runs them over. Doing that in front of a live audience is almost impossible.
Yeah, yeah.
Because it had to still work for the audience.
It had to work for the audience and the cameras and at the same time. Yeah, yeah. And, like, it violence doesn't work that way.
It doesn't. No, you can't. You know, for example, what do we do? Brian Johnson out of AC/DC.
Yeah.
I mean, he's like 90 or something, and we want him to get run over.
He doesn't even have hearing anymore.
No, I know. It's just, he just hears the whole time.
Poor Brian.
I know. Bless him. He's a lovely man as well. Mm-hmm. He's a really nice guy.
One of the coolest people I've ever met, actually.
Yeah, he is.
I'm me son.
Yeah.
Everyone's me son.
Yeah, me son.
I got to drink beer with him at like 8 a.m. in New York City for a
really?
Bit. Yeah, he was one of the celebrities on one of the dumb shows I was on. He was kind enough to guest. And what as a scene, we drank beer at 8 in the morning. He was fucking great.
Bless him. He did once. Bizarrely, we went down to Australia. They were doing Top Gear Live down there. And a couple of us went down to go and see the people making the Australian version of Top Gear and give them a little bit of guidance. And we were staying in the same hotel as AC/DC, as it turns out. Mm. And we ended up having pizza and a beer in the bar with Brian. And he's sitting there in this kind of armchair. And then about 9 o'clock, he just went, all right, me sons, I'm getting upstairs to watch Dad's Army and Spag of a Fatty. And Dad's Army is like this 1970s sitcom about the Second World War that is like, it's just such a kind of old man thing to watch. But then he was going to Spag of a Fatty as well.
Perfect.
So, yeah.
Especially in a country where that's like a felony.
Yeah.
That's a really
but
big.
He's the guy out of AC/DC.
Yeah, he can do
How
anything.
Dare they suggest he can't do what he wants to do?
Hey, listen, they arrested Snoop Dogg for weed here and Willie Nelson. Texas. That's why you don't go to Texas.
Yeah. Yeah. Don't mess with Texas.
Anyway, sorry. Murdering celebrities.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. So we started doing that. But it was, again, it was trying to make a virtue out of not having celebs on by saying, you know, we're just making a gag out of it. But it just didn't really work. And so obviously that got dropped. But then, of course, then we got actual celebs on for the second series.
Yeah. So what was the conversation like where it eventually was, it's time to get rid of the tent?
It wasn't.
Was that just a Willman literal executive decision? Like, it was, time's up, boys.
Well, because it's very complicated because the original commission for the show was three seasons series, as we call them, and they were that was what Amazon wanted, paid a handsome amount of money for, and I mean, I personally sort of assumed that might be it because. Yeah. We were the only sort of recognizable show / format that they bought. Everything else they were making and continue to make is original.
Yeah. Scripted or dramas and whatnot. Yeah.
This is the first thing where they sort of bought something that already existed in some form. And it made a statement. It was a good way for them to go, hey, look, everyone, we make TV now.
Yeah, yeah.
And so I
sold a lot of subscriptions.
Yeah,
I imagine.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah. Well, I think it did. They don't really share data with us. They like data.
They don't share data with you.
No.
Really?
No.
So you don't actually know if the ratings are good?
I've no
it's
idea.
Not just me that doesn't know.
No,
it's you have no idea.
No one knows.
Willman, no idea.
No,
Clarkson, no idea.
No. It was always made explicitly clear from the off, we will not tell you ratings. That's just their policy.
And it's not personal. So it's like, can you get a thumbs up? Is there a like, dislike?
Yeah. It would be nice to think. But then also, every time we met people from Amazon, they were always so nice, and like we had a debrief after the first series, and they all came, like 30 of them came over to London, And there were six of us, I think it was the hosts, me and Wilma.
Like, where's everybody else?
Yeah. And it was a bit like, oh, shit, we could have come to you, you know. It's like, I felt a bit, it was like, oh, no, we've made them all. Amazon company policy as well says that everyone flies economy. Doesn't matter how important
really?
You fly economy.
I bet you don't become Jeremy loves rich. That.
Well, no, that's fine. See, because we don't work for Amazon. We work for Jeremy and Andy and James.
So they have their own company policy.
Our policy is business class, my friend. Thank you very much. And first class for the presenters.
So that's see, everyone except for Richard's tall. So that makes
sense. Exactly, yeah.
Not so you, Richard. The other short Richard.
Yeah, but no, our policy is a little more liberal.
Yeah.
On luxury. But yeah, so these poor 30 people who up to, you know, very senior TV bots shoved in the back of the plane and flown over. And after that first season, we made a big mistake in that first season, which was that the second show was that one where it was on the military training range in Jordan.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And was it Edge of Tomorrow was the movie? I forget now. Where it kept flashing back, you know, they had to get it right.
Yeah,
or they went back.
Oh, it was like Groundhog Day or
something. Yeah, like Groundhog Day. And
you did the same thing like 30 times.
I know. And it was, and the thing is, I just started.
That was like the Spinal Tap freeform jazz odyssey of automotive programming.
Jeremy Clarkson, he wrote this. Dum, dum, dum. I just started back on the show and Jeremy had already written that script and I read it and I thought, this is fucking insane and we shouldn't be doing this. It just seems mad and it's like making a film and it's just weird. And then they went and made it and came back and I was like, oh, actually this has got something to it. And I really, really liked that film. And actually it bears repeated watching. Like, it gets better. There are little details,
nuances in it.
Yeah, there's a line I absolutely love, which is an ad lib, but James, they were on that airliner, you know, the sort of terrorist training airliner, and it's a real plane, and James came through the curtain from the rear bit of the plane and Jeremy goes, James, are the terrorists dead? And he goes, everybody's dead. He's just basically machine guns all of these dummies. But it's the way he says it, and also because it's James and you don't expect James to
be very dry delivery for this murder
lunatic. Yeah. So I really like that film, but we put it in the second show, I think, as a kind of statement of, hey, things are going to be different sometimes. We're not going to do exactly what you expect. But what it actually did was it threw people off. I think a lot of people hated it. They didn't get it. They didn't understand why. It didn't have any cars in it until the second part, which doesn't help.
Yeah.
And so people just settled down. You know, the first episode, okay, it starts those three Mustangs going across the desert. There's loads of cars. It's quite car-y. They go to Portugal. They're driving those three hypercars.
Right.
It settles all the fan base down because they go, oh, brilliant.
They go, is this going to be cars? Okay, it's cars.
It's cars. Thank God it's cars.
Yeah.
And then the second ep was like, oh, no, it's not. It's what the hell is it?
And isn't it weird how the audience, if you don't do the thing they expect you to do, like, even if they trust you to be creative, but only within a certain.
Yeah.
Like, it's funny because you mentioned that I complain about when people do this with me as well. If I do something different and everyone fucking hates it.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I have complained about the same thing from people that I like. You know what I mean? If they go too conceptual, you can shovel the shit all the way uphill with humans will be humans.
Have you ever, there's an English singer songwriter called Ralph McTell his most famous song is Streets of London. I don't know if you know that. I won't sing it for copyright reasons, but
you can, that's allowed actually.
Oh, okay, so it's that one that goes, let me take you by the hand and lead you through the streets of London. It's a sort of lilting,
nothing,
folky balance.
Got nothing, right? Okay. Sorry.
Shazam it. When, not off my version, though.
Download Streets of London.
And then somewhere an algorithm is going, oh, Matt Farah likes Ralph McTell all of a sudden. Sell him loads of Ralph McTells. But they did a brilliant thing. There's this great sort of cult sketch show in the UK called Big Train from the 90s. And they did this sketch with Simon Pegg, actually, out of Star Trek and all these things, playing a member of the audience with someone else pretending to be Ralph McTell on the stage at a little pub gig. And it comes to him. He's just finished playing Streets of London. And he goes, okay, you probably all knew that one. And now here's a new one. And it cuts the audience. And Simon Pegg goes, play Streets of London. And then other people around go, yeah, play Streets of London. And he goes, I've just played it. Play it again. no, I'm going to play a new one now. And he starts playing it, and Simon Pegg picks up a pint glass and throws it at the stage. And it's like, I play Slice of London.
That's like the that movie that just came out, Stars Born, Lady Gaga.
Yeah.
And it's like that. The most unrealistic thing about that movie is that the audience would be excited to hear a new one.
Oh, yes. Never happened. I went to see U2 playing at Twickenham Stadium in London last summer because I got some freebies to go. And my wife's a huge U2 fan, and you know,
it's quite an awesome show.
Exactly, they put on a hell of a show. Yeah. And it was also them doing the Joshua Tree.
You go see that.
But then the second half of the show, then they just do a grab bag of hits, and and they know how to please a crowd. But they went. Bono comes on and goes. After they'd done sort of one or something, you know, and everyone's like, really? Oh my God, this is an amazing moment.
The women are fainting.
Yes, that's it. People having this sort of religious moments. And then he went, all right, this is a new one. And the temperature dropped in the stadium. And you just go,
I think I'm going to get a pint.
Yeah, it was. It was incredible. You just go, oh, that's a ballsy thing to do.
Yeah.
But
I did, even the bands I've loved I go see Pearl Jam. I've been to 52 Pearl Jam shows.
Seriously? And
seriously.
Are they still going?
Fuck yeah. Have you never seen Pearl Jam?
No.
I so strongly recommend it.
I used to, I quite like Pearl Jam, but I used to go out with a girl who's a huge Pearl Jam fan.
Oh, is that tattoo? That's a Pearl Jam tattoo. Yeah.
An ex-girlfriend of mine was a huge Pearl Jam fan, and I used to just deliberately irritate her by telling her that Eddie Vedder's full name was Edward Vedwood, and for some reason it used to really... She'd go, no, it isn't. That's not true.
But it's really funny.
I go, no, he is. He's called Edward Vedwood. And they just shorten it. And she's like, that's not true. You know that's not true.
No, you know what? Pearl Jam now is almost like the Grateful Dead, right, in that it's really about the touring. Okay. And they don't play like 40-minute songs, but every single show is different. And they have a really deep catalog, and they play fucking all of it. So you can go to 4 shows in a row,
right,
and they will be completely different.
Ah.
In fact, the only song I've seen at every single of those 52 shows is Even Flow.
Oh,
they play Even Flow at every single show, and everything else, it's a total grab bag. Wow. And it's actually very fun.
See, I'd be at the back going, do Jeremy. Play Jeremy.
They do a lot of Jeremy. I've seen Jeremy, I'd say, probably half the shows I see Jeremy.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, even if you aren't a huge fan, they have enough hits that you will be satisfied at any show.
It's like I went to, what was it, Live Earth, the big concert at Wembley Stadium, and one of the headliners was Foo Fighters.
Yeah.
Unbelievably good.
Yeah, crazy energy. Dave Grohl's a beast.
I don't know how they do it. It haunted me afterwards. I was going, how is a band that good live? Because I was like, I kind of like them, but I'm not familiar with their stuff enough.
And you realized, I know all of this.
And a mate of mine just gave me all their albums on a memory stick.
Yeah.
Do I listen to them at home? Do I buggery? It's weird. I never go, oh, I'm in a Foo Fighters mood. But if someone went, I've got 2 tickets to go see the Foo Fighters, I'd be like,
yeah, 100%. You know who I saw last year? I saw Metallica.
Oh, yeah.
At the Rose Bowl last year. And I liked Metallica in high school and college, and you know, I got annoyed with them at Napster and all that bullshit.
Oh yeah.
But let me tell you something. I have never in my life seen a more precise band.
Really?
They played like it was a symphony, and every note was flawless. It was the most precision rock music I've ever seen played live. And they set everything on fire, right, which was a lot of fun.
Was that the name of the tour? Metallica, the Everything's on Fire tour. Warning, wear asbestos.
Yeah, I saw the band Rammstein back in the day. Ooh. They set everything on fire. They all had flamethrowers. It was a crazy
show. Does that make your ears ring, Rammstein?
I mean, it was
how do they sing like that? How do those death metal guys sing like that and not then just go home and go,
I don't know. They only speak in falsetto when they get home.
They're all really softly spoken. Sorry, I've just got to go and do some singing.
I bet they have a crazy like warm-up routine.
Yeah.
Their vocal exercises, you know, they're sipping tea and going...
Yeah. We've got your rider. We were expecting it to be beer and cocaine, and actually it's just honey. You just want honey. Lots of honey. Okay.
Ginkgo biloba, is that correct, sir?
Anyway, didn't this used to be a car show?
I mean, it can be anything I fucking wanted to.
It's Christmas Eve. Should.
I could talk about that nice little Seiko you've got going on there with the Grado. That's lovely.
No, that's an Omega, that.
Oh, is that an Omega? Yeah, oh, shit, I'm sorry if I insulted you there. Is that a Speedmaster?
Speedmaster Mark II.
Oh, that's fire.
Don't you get...
I apologize. I do a watch show,
Are we going to do this live where I hand you my watch on air and you can look at it and I'll just sing Ralph McTell while you're
actually
doing that.
Very pretty.
That's, I like that. Yeah, it's a racing dial on that one.
Yeah. Speedmaster Racing. Yeah, that's the one.
They did a reissue of this a few years ago.
They did. I can add the watch cam if we want to get...
Oh, really?
Yeah, look. Here, we'll add it in. And here, you just pull this guy up.
Slide it under. Okay, there we go.
And hang on, you do the thing here. I make it nice. I zoom it in. Look at that. That's just lovely.
See, that's got what old watch nerds would call a bit of patina to it, because the dials are a bit faded. And that's why I didn't like the reissues, because the racing detail around the edge is really bright, and I don't like that. And also the subdials for some reason were more inset, and it's not it's just not as nice.
I apologize for calling that a Seiko.
No, I love Seikos as well. I'm a complete
Seiko. Similar to like a 6139.
Yes, I know what you mean. It has that. It has a look. It has the same sort of proportions
of the period.
Yes. Well, that's... so this is a 69.
In the way that a DeLorean also looks like a Lotus.
You're talking to the wrong man, because I don't think that. But some people do.
They do a little bit.
Yeah,
a little bit.
It's your Giugiaro, isn't it?
Giugiaro. That actually has... that watch could be... it has a Giugiaro color scheme almost on it.
Yeah. Have you seen those Seikos that he did? Mm-hmm. They're mental.
The Alien movies.
Yeah.
The Ripley he did is fucking crazy.
Yeah, I know. It's one of those ones where it'd be like an Omega. You know the Ploprof ones. And you just go, I don't think I could pull that off.
Every time I go to a watch event, which always seems like a good idea, and then I get there and I go, this wasn't a good idea. there's always somebody wearing a Giugiaro Seiko, always.
Really?
Yeah. You know, it's a sea of Rolex Daytonas and shit, and then there's the one guy with the Giugiaro Seiko.
I bought my first Rolex this year.
Congratulations.
I don't really like Rolexes, I'll be honest. And I bought an old 70s Air King.
Oh, yeah. It's a good watch.
Really, really understated.
Yeah, it's a good watch.
And... I sort of get what people get about Rolexes now, because it is just... I'm going to use the word exquisite. It's exquisitely
lovely,
made.
Aren't they? Yeah.
The detail and the dial and everything about it is just... But I find them a bit... I always think Rolexes are a bit like Ferraris, that they're sort of what rich people go and buy because they can. And although the engineering is beyond reproach, certainly these days with Ferraris and I guess with Rolexes, it's sort of... You can't necessarily... If you see someone wearing a Rolex, you go... Are they into watches, or are they just a rich...
Right. Pick? No, it makes it totally... It's like it's just the standard go-to. It's like your first nice, you know, thing.
I have a nice thing because I have money now.
What I like about them is you can absolutely beat the shit out of them. They are so durable.
Really?
Yeah. Rolexes are really well-made and durable watches, and you can treat them like garbage, and they are fine.
Yeah.
That's like my favorite thing about them, actually.
I mean, I don't really do that much that... Well, perilous thing I do with my watches is bathing my children, because I forget there's so much. I've got quite a lot of old stuff, and of course, you know, the seals are not what they were usually, and you shouldn't get them.
I don't intentionally beat the shit in my watches, but
I was just picturing you going home and going, oh, good day.
As a left-handed person, I wear my watch in my right hand, and so banisters and walls in America, I just end up hitting it into stuff all the time. And that's why I know that. It's not because I am like swinging sledgehammers and like, you know, doing construction with it on. But like, I just in life, because I wear it on the quote wrong hand, ended up hitting it into stuff all the time. And so I know it's durable.
I'm not even sure that's a inverted commas wrong hand thing, though, is it? Because I've got...
It's not wrong. It's...
I've
just
got another
lifty
one of these. It's a Mark III Seamaster, a Speedmaster Professional, and it's got a big chunky case in it, like a Flightmaster case, if you know those. Same, very similar case. And it's tall, and it sits really tall on your wrist. And so it doesn't fit under a lot of shirt cuffs.
Yeah.
Leave your cuffs undone, which I do because I'm slovenly. But when you're wearing a T-shirt, you're always twatting it on things, and it makes a horrible noise.
Conk, conk.
And it stands up to it really well. But at the same time, it's a lovely old watch. It was the first kind of, again, inverted commas, nice watch that I ever got. It's 1973, and I've got the original, you know, that thing that watch bores do, where they get came with box and papers. And this is a box and papers watch, and the papers show that it was bought in Brussels on Christmas Eve, 1973.
Pippin!
So I'm thinking
it's exactly
present.
It's
for
exactly
someone,
35 years old. Yeah. 45 years old right now.
Yes.
45.
Yeah, yeah. Today is its birthday. I should have worn it, but it's back in London sleeping.
I can't wear. I am too abusive on watches, and I can't wear vintage ones anymore. The modern ones are just much tougher. Yeah, the sapphire crystals. I would just scratch them up too bad. The old ones, but it's okay.
Yeah, that's all right.
Anyway, as far as Grand Tour goes,
yes.
So Tent is gone.
Yes. That was meant to be a secret. We were hoping that wouldn't get out until the show went out in March. It was
that
the
didn't
most.
Work out at all. That was fucking.
As I'm
front
saying,
page
I'm
news.
Thinking I sound stupid saying this because it's like there's 500 people. We had the biggest audience we'd ever had in that tent, I think, and it was a sort of knocking on 500.
That was
people.
The biggest audience.
Yeah.
Really?
For the last show.
Oh, did the tent get bigger than the first season? I was in the season one tent.
No, the tent didn't get bigger, but what happened is we stopped. There was a slight reconfiguring of it, and also because we put it into one place in that field in Oxfordshire for series two and now three, we could then get the local sort of fire inspector to come and certify it for a larger amount.
Oh, right.
We weren't
having
to sort of do individual certification for every place that we went to.
Behind the scenes.
Yeah, this is fascinating. Ask me another question about fire certification.
Fuck me, dude. I'm going building construction right now. I had to fight them over putting a fire hydrant. They wanted me to install a fire hydrant.
Really?
Yeah.
Is that a difficult thing to do?
It's very expensive. Depending on where you have to put it.
Right.
Because it's not the fire hydrant itself. It's like, do you have to close a three-lane road for 2 days to install it? That's when you really have the
problem. I would quite like a fire hydrant, though, outside my property, so that if I was driving a massive 70s land yacht, that at some point I could lose control of it and smash over the fire hydrant.
And create a nice
huge
geyser.
Mountain. Yes.
Yes.
Yeah, full police squad spec.
I could use one outside my house in case my Countach catches fire.
Yeah. We've done the Countach, actually, on the new series of the Grand Tour.
Did you?
Look at my seamless link there.
Who drove it and hated it? Who drove it and how much did it hit?
Hammond drove it and loved it, and James drove a Testarossa, and they did a little twin test at the track.
What series Countach did he drive?
Simple one. It's Harry Metcalf's one. If you've
seen
that.
I think so I believe that's a 5000S. Right? It's like an 83 or something like that. 84 maybe.
84, 85 even maybe.
It's a very pretty car.
Yeah.
I consulted with Harry when I bought mine.
Did you?
I asked for some tips.
Yeah, he knows them well.
Well, really well. And his has a lot of miles on it, right? He drives it a lot.
He uses it, and that's the thing. And he was happy to loan it out to us.
Yeah.
And
how about is Harry's Countach the only thing that has appeared on both the Grand Tour and Chris Harris's Top Gear? Because it's
that's
on
a
the
good
set.
Question, yeah.
It's on the
Testarossa
it's on the rack
well.
And the set in new Top Gear.
Yeah. That's how funny. I hadn't thought about that. But
it's appeared on both. No IP theft there, sir.
No.
he's like that friend that has to share in the divorce.
Yes.
To visit the husband and the wife separately. So,
yes. It's all amicable as long as we get access to Harry and his lovely car.
Right? It's a beautiful car.
Yeah, yeah. So, no, Hammond loved it and James loved the Testarossa, but then we got back to the studio and Jeremy had a different opinion. So.
I'm sure he did. Here's
Harry was in. Oh, it's an E-Reg. So E is.
Here's Harry's Countach.
E is. Is 88 actually?
No, it's not an 88, is it?
Well, it might be an 87, but yeah.
Was it a QV or an S? I thought it was. I thought he had an S.
You see now,
I'm looking.
Remember.
I got to find the badge now because mine is a QV. Mine is an 88.
Right. Well, I think this is probably the same sort of era. Then you'll see the.
Oh, is there
that.
A badge here? What does it say? Oh, that's. That's QV. Same as mine. Okay, it is a QV.
Oh
my God, I'm so sorry. I did not click the live button. The video audience is probably no. I didn't share the picture because I just was paying attention to Lamborghinis. Same year as mine. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's fucking rad. Do you remember how many miles are on his?
No.
I think it's a bunch because he drives the shit out of it.
Yeah. Well, that's it. He's not precious about it at all. He just uses it when he wants to.
Yeah.
And he lets other people use it when they want to as well.
Yeah. And so you brought it back to the studio and is it right-hand drive?
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah,
cool. Yeah.
So
Jeremy was not such a fan.
Yeah. So we knew that Jeremy was going to pull James and Richard up on their enthusiasm for these 80s supercars. And I was standing there and with Andy Willman, and then I looked around and went, Andy, Harry's standing behind us knowing what was going to happen in the next link. And Wilma went, distract him. Go and distract him. And I was like, how am I supposed to distract him? I'm like, oh, you know him. Go and talk to him. So I was like, but he's watching the show. He's going to know.
Yeah.
And he was, in fact, really cool about it because, let's be honest, Harry doesn't care what Jeremy says about his cars.
I'm sure he doesn't.
He likes them.
Yeah.
He owns them. He could buy another one if he wanted to. He's a rich and successful man. So why does he give a toss?
Does he care what Jeremy
Someone goes,
says about
I don't like your car. Well, I do. So
yeah.
I mean,
he doesn't have anything to prove.
No, he's not, that's the thing.
He's not a Countach salesman.
No, exactly. Yes, Harry's world of Countaches. Oh, we're ruined. God damn it.
Harry, when I talked to Harry, his opinion of it was pretty much the same as my opinion, which is the Testarossa was made a little better and is a little easier to use, but that the Countach has such a presence to it that it's so much more fun to go play with because it's just so ridiculous.
Yeah. I know. That's the thing. And I think Harry, he understands as well the investment potential of those cars because he got in on the ground floor. Well, not quite the ground floor.
I think he bought it cheap.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Knowing, because he's clever, I think, that all of that 80s stuff was about to take off because, you know, it's the usual reasons, isn't it? People who were kids in the 80s who had posters of those cars are now older people and some of them have got some money. And they start buying up this stuff because some of the old hot hatchbacks from the 80s are going a bit empty in the UK.
Speaking of posters, since you brought up posters, check this out. I went out yesterday.
Is that your car?
That's my car. I went out yesterday to the Top of the Snake, which in Malibu, they've just reopened it after the fire.
Oh, God,
This is torched out. All this right here, this was all green. There were trees. Look at this. This was all vegetation.
Yeah.
It's torched out. The fire was brutal.
Yeah.
Everything is dead. But they reopened the road. They cleaned it. They put painted fresh lines on it. And I went out with Larry Chen, who is one of the best photographers working today.
I've heard him on this show.
He's an amazing photographer. So talented. And, we shot a poster. He shot it. It's going to be crazy. Over 100 megapixels.
Right.
And with my car and this, and we're going to be selling it through 1552, the wheel company, through their website. I'll have more announcements. Probably starting next week. It's going to be, I think, a 24 by 36 or maybe a 30 by 40 poster. And we're going to be selling it. And all the money is going to go to fire relief in Malibu.
Nice.
Because the devastation, like what you really can't see right down here is all of this is just rubble. Like the homes are all just gone. It's really sad. It's really, and it's crazy to see. And we did this such beautiful poster. So yeah.
And I'm enjoying the gold wheels as well.
The gold wheels are very, very fun. This was at Spike Ferriston's hangar yesterday.
Is that at Santa Monica Airport?
It is. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, we're staying quite near there.
Are you?
Well, I know that because lots of little planes keep flying over the house.
Yeah. No, Santa Monica Airport, there's some super stealth car collections in there. Letterman has a building in there.
Oh, does he? Yeah. Is that where Seinfeld's cars are?
Seinfeld's cars used to be there, and he now has his own building up the road from there that is the most invisible.
Oh, really?
you'd never know. It's an
Seinfeld's world of cars.
It looks like... Yeah, Jerry's
the
place.
The sign was a mistake.
No, it's he's got a super DL invisible with 100 million in cars in it.
Nice.
And Spike's got a few toys in there. So I was shooting in the morning. We did the poster. In the afternoon, I went over to here. And there's a guy named Matt Horanek who did a book called A Man and His Watch last year.
Okay,
you see that book? I don't know. I have a copy.
Rings a bell, yes.
It's a good book about...
I think maybe I saw it being mentioned on Hodinkee or something.
Probably, yeah. His second book is coming out. It's called A Man in His Car.
Okay.
So I'm going to be featured with Countach in that. But Gold Wheels FTW. I'm a fan of the gold wheels.
Yes, yes.
And also, Harry's got that snow corn interior, right? It's like the white almost interior.
Yeah.
That's got to be a bitch to keep clean. I have the regular tan, like camel tan.
I think Harry just drives it naked. We did. Just again to clunkily shift gears into sort of promoting something else that I do, because I have this little YouTube channel with my mate Johnny Smith. And
Smith and Sniff.
Smith and Sniff.
Get it on YouTube. Subscribe.
And, yes, like and subscribe.
Like and subscribe.
Johnny kept saying to me, and he's cleverer at sort of social media and things than me, I think, because he went, we should sort of keep saying to people like and subscribe on the vids. And I went, no, it just sounds stupid.
Yeah, you sound like a cunt.
And then I was talking to and I was talking to someone who works in that sort of world, and they went, no, it works like a charm. Trust me, do it. people just obediently go and like and subscribe if you say, yeah, please do that. And so we tried it, and sure enough,
they do. Yeah, they do. I would be so much more successful at this if I was willing to do those jump through hoops bullshit things that I feel so ridiculous doing, I just won't do.
There's a fantastic podcaster in the UK. Well, he's a comedian and all sorts of things. A guy called Adam Buxton who interviews people.
Oh, I've heard that. I've heard that name.
His podcast is great because he writes his own jingles and makes his own ads, in fact, for the sponsors. So everything is in sort of his tone, and he has a little song at the end of every episode that just goes like and subscribe, like and subscribe, and it's very catchy, and it makes you want to like and subscribe.
Here he is.
It's quite effective.
Adam-buxton.co.uk.
Yeah, he's fantastic.
Like and subscribe.
Yeah. Now I can't get that song out of my head again. What was I saying? Oh, yeah. So,
liking and subscribing.
Yeah. So we're doing this little YouTube thing, me and Johnny. And one of the shows that people seem to really like was, because we just go out in a car and we try and review the car, but then we get a bit distracted. Now we now have an editor who cuts stuff and he just picks bits that make him laugh. And we've realized longer episodes work better than short ones, weirdly. I don't know how people can be bothered, because I often look, and if something's like 40 minutes I'll just go... Even something like Harry Metcalf's Garage, because
he does
really long stuff, and I'll sort of go, oh, I haven't got time for that. But we did a 40-minute ep for the first time a few weeks ago, and it got loads of views. But we did one, which was just one of our chats that just came from nowhere, which was Harry's Garage, but sort of... as if Harry had completely lost his mind and decided to stage like a sort of English Burning Man at his farm.
Seriously?
With all of the cars like getting spray painted in rainbow colours. They're all totally fucked up. And Harry's wandering around. Johnny said Harry's wandering around completely naked but still wearing Crocs.
Can I picture that so easily?
I know, it's just disturbing. And also because he's done that thing that sort of men of a certain age who want to see rock and roll do, which is that although it's kind of his hair's thinning at the front, he's let it grow long at the back, like Mick Fleetwood. So we speculated on all this stuff, and bless him, Harry, because he's a top man, and Johnny and I know him. But he took
in America. The metaphor would be a Hulk Hogan there.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. So Hulk Metcalf. But bless him, Harry. Well, took
somebody
it in
make
spirit,
that
meant.
Shirt.
Yeah.
Somebody make a Hulk Metcalf shirt.
Oh, great. Hello. It's WrestleMania. but he's arriving in the ring in his kuntash with the doors up.
Oh my god! Like a baller. Great.
Or reversing by sitting on the sill like the factory driver.
You know, I can't do that.
No, I think Now, weirdly, I wonder if it's... No, it can't be easier in a right-hand drive car because the clutch is further away.
The clutch is further away. I can't figure out how to do it. I know, like, I've seen people do it. I know it can be done, but I cannot do it.
And it does look like something that could go really badly
wrong. Fucking hell, yeah, it could.
You fell out of your own car while it's in reverse.
While it's in reverse and in gear.
My car. Or did you ever hear that story? There was a British band called E17, and one of their... members, a guy called Brian Harvey, famously ran himself over with his own car.
Oh, that's fucking great.
And but the brilliant bit of the backstory was that he said, oh, I stopped because I'd been eating too many baked potatoes and I felt sick. So I pulled over to be sick, and he tried to sort of lean out of the car to be sick, somehow
but he fell out
of it, and it was in gear. I guess it was an automatic.
Too many baked potatoes. I know, the baked potato bit. The baked potatoes is the bit that does it. Is that a metaphor? Because vodka is made of potatoes.
Yeah, I know. I was wondering. It's like baked potatoes. Were they those baked potatoes that you eat through your nose?
Baked potatoes just means I was smoking weed and drinking vodka. I was very baked. It's always, and I had all this potato.
This was years ago, and it still haunts me. I just go, why was he eating baked potatoes? What was he doing?
I'm picturing like The Martian, where Matt Damon has to exclusively eat potatoes for like a year and a half.
Yeah, yeah. It wasn't that. I don't know. He
ran himself over.
He ran himself over. Yeah, it's a famous thing. I was thinking in the UK, it's just now. You know, when a person becomes famous for one thing, so it's like, you know, if John Lennon had been caught bumming a dog, then he would have been John Lennon. Yeah, you wrote Imagine, but you remember when he bummed a dog?
And it's the Pee Wee Herman.
Yes.
Pee Wee Herman. All he did was, you know, have a little wank in a theater at a time when lots of other people were doing that. He can never get away from that.
No, it's odd, isn't it? And that's the thing. So Brian Harvey, if you say Brian Harvey to people in the UK, they will usually go, oh yeah, ran himself over. Baked potatoes.
Do we know what kind of car it was?
Do you know what? I think I do, because I'm deeply tragic like that. I think it was a Mercedes W124 Cabrio.
Ran. Did I spell his name wrong?
Yeah, okay. But there you go. See, it comes up. There you go. Look, first headline. Harvey blames potato feast for freak accident. It's a beautiful thing.
Potato feast. Wow, they really
See, he's reversing Mercedes. So.
The Telegraph really doesn't do capitalization, do they? What is that headline? Is that a UK thing? They only capitalize the first letter of a title of a headline?
Yeah. Which, I mean, correct,
this looks pretty modern.
2005.
Oh, yeah. For some reason, you told me that story, and I really pictured it happening
like
in the 80s. Yeah.
Well, because there was the baked potato boom in the 80s, wasn't there? Everyone went mad for potatoes.
Potato boom.
There actually was. Weirdly, joking aside, there was a chain of, fast food restaurants called Spudgy-like in the UK, and they did baked potatoes.
Spudgy-like.
And then
there's one here called the Humble Potato as well.
Oh, really?
Yeah, yeah. There's one not far
now,
away. You can go visit it today.
I'm going now in my Mercedes convertible. Oh, no, my leg.
That's fucking hilarious. Speaking of cars, last time you were in America, didn't you have a Dodge Dually 3500 or something driving around?
That was years ago. That was the infamous when Aaron Gold,
hooked
me up with that.
What are you driving this time you're here?
Well, it is actually a massive truck because I remembered that somebody I used to deal with at Ford in the UK in their press office emigrated out here to the States and works in Detroit now. So I emailed her and went, hey, long time no speak. Listen, coming to the US in December, I don't suppose you could sort me out with a car. And she went, yeah, sure, I'm sure we can. Because I went, I sort of did the whole, a bit of a favor to ask.
Yeah. You will get zero coverage.
Yeah, well, no, I'm writing about it.
Oh, you are?
For a national
I can lend you GoPros if you want to do a sniff and a Madden
just
sniff.
On my own.
And yeah.
Yeah.
I look like Johnny. I could shave the sideburns.
He's actually, that's an old picture because Johnny's shaved his head now.
He's
got your
really?
Haircut, yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because in this picture, he looks a little like George Michael.
Really?
I mean, just the sideburns and
was in that. That's in a Bentley Bentayga. And one of the conversations we had in that Bentayga was about George Michael because we were driving around near where I live, which is where George Michael used to live.
Oh.
And
Did you have faith?
You've got to have faith. A faith. Yeah, George Michael lived just at the road. In fact, he was born just around the corner from where I live, but then he just lived at the street. Because I once saw him in a Range Rover driving. Got to a roundabout and he was coming the other way. And as he went by, I was like, bloody hell, that's George Michael. And I put this on Twitter and then someone replied with, isn't he banned from driving for a year?
Oh, shit.
And I looked it up and he was.
Oh,
I was
no.
Like, oh, no, I've just got George Michael in trouble.
You knocked George Michael on
the lead singer of Wham. Bless him. Womp. Really sad. He once rang the Top Gear office out of the blue and he went, hi, it's George Michael. And he went to the phone, I think, slightly panicked, and went. And Jeremy was in the office by chance. Went, Jeremy, George Michael's on the phone for you. And Jeremy went over and was like, hello. And George Michael's like, hi, listen, I want to talk to you about my Range Rover because I'm so sick of it going wrong. I've had so many problems with it and the one before, but this one is really driving me nuts. Yeah. And I just wondered, have you got any contacts at Land Rover who can help me out? Because the dealer's being useless and it's really winding me up. And Jeremy, thinking on his feet, went, yeah, I'm sure we can. But listen, while you're on, do you want to come on the show?
Yeah.
And George Michael went, can I talk about the problems with my Range Rover? Jerry went, you can, but you know, be a proper guest and come on and do the whole thing. And he went, oh no, I don't want to drive the car
all
on
he
the track. If I can just come on and talk about my Range Rover, I'll do it. And Jerry's like, no, it doesn't really work like that. But listen, you know, well, keep in touch. And then he got cut off. And
never called back.
Yeah. And never called
what
back.
What a bizarre.
It was really weird, but bless him. Everything I read about George Michael after he died, he seemed like he was a very conflicted and very complicated guy, and obviously not particularly happy in himself at times.
Yeah.
But he was also, it seems, an incredibly generous and good-hearted bloke, and he did a lot of work.
Well, those things are not mutually exclusive.
No, no, exactly, they're not, and that's the thing. But I think people didn't see that side of him until it sort of came out. You know,
but it turns out he was afraid of driving a hatchback around a racetrack.
Yeah, it turns out. I think it's because he wouldn't be able to concentrate because he was so consumed with anger at his Range Rover going wrong again. So, yeah.
Can I come on your show and just complain about
it? Yeah, exactly. It's not really a consumer show like that, but you know, we could have made fun of it if we just.
That could have been a good bit.
Yeah, we've
if
got.
If he
a,
played along, it could have been a good.
We've
bit.
Got a young man here from. He lives in North London. He's got a consumer issue with his Range Rover. Please welcome a Mr. Michael.
If you could have transcribed that conversation into a letter, you could have opened a bit. George from North London.
Just made it a running joke every week. Are we adding more letters from George Michael? Yeah, we have actually. Yeah, what's happened now? apparently, one of the headlights has gone out.
There's a guy who I've banned from commenting on this show who would just complain about he wanted to use my show to bitch about the dealer that wouldn't take his warranty coverage on his Bentley. I swear to God, it wasn't even like it was his fucking Nissan Altima. Like this fucking dealer's fucking me on the warranty on my Bentley. And he would, every show he would comment and want me to address this issue. And I'd be like, stop it.
The magazine that I write for, Evo, it's a sort of performance car magazine in the UK.
It's very a good magazine.
Very good magazine.
It is a very good magazine.
And one day I was up at the office and they got a call and it was from Felix Dennis, the late owner of Evo and a load of other magazines of Dennis Publishing. And Felix Dennis, the big boss, rang the Evo office and spoke to one of the editors and went, have you ever noticed when you're riding in the back of a Bentley Mulsanne, there's a knocking noise from the back suspension? It's really annoying. You should do a feature on it. And John Barker, who's the editor at the time, was like, conflicted, because obviously it's the big boss with power of life over the whole magazine.
Who the fuck is
but he's suggesting
this?
Dog shit features that are just basically his personal problems that he wants the magazine to devote time to.
And if this was Fox News, that would be headline story.
Yeah. But Evo has a bit more integrity than that. And so John had to kind of go through this. That's a great idea, Felix.
Oh,
but,
my God.
Yeah, and then sort of just sort of talk him down from it. And go, I got distracted there because I saw that thing about the...
Yeah, the STI Subaru. Coming in England. Yeah. Is this a real story from you, though?
Yeah, the Morgan.
Is this the picture they sent you?
Yeah, it really is. That's a press
photo. It says, Morgan teases new wide-body sports car before... By the way, is that a three-wheeler with the front two wheels just pushed further out? Have they added
a fourth... stabilizers off the back.
We've added training wheels and called it a wide-body.
Well, it's wider. I don't know what your problem is.
But this picture of the Morgan shed...
Well, it's a picture of a roller shutter, isn't it? Morgan announces new roller shutter for 2019. It's made of aluminium because the old wooden one went rotten.
Oh, my God. I love fucking Morgan. They're great, out of their minds.
They are fantastic.
You ever drive a Aero Supersports?
No.
Fucking hilarious cars. It's like the Great Gatsby. None of it makes any sense. It's so silly and stupid, but you look over those fenders, you know, it makes a 911 look so pedestrian, pontoon fenders look so pedestrian.
Yeah.
It's like this, it's like driving like a car from the 30s.
Yeah,
it's
nuts. No, I know.
But it's actually fast.
Yes, that's the thing, isn't it? They're not short of power, and they're really light as well.
Yeah, so yeah.
They just zip along. No, that is a real story. It always drives me mad. All the magazines, I don't know if they do it in the US, I haven't really noticed, but like Autocar magazine in the UK is particularly prone to this kind of headline where it'll say like Morgan teases new wide-body sports car or Jaguar teases new SUV. And I always go, it just makes me think that there's a load of engineers going, you're a twat. You're an idiot. You smell. No one likes you. Stop teasing the car. No, we like teasing the car. It's got really smelly doors.
Do you want to tease a car? I'll let you tease a car. Last week, before I went on vacation, and I did go on a little vacation, I went to Palm Springs to drive this.
The Urus. That looks weird there.
Doesn't it?
I mean, it always looks weird.
It looks really
disjointed. That looks like one of those sort of, you know, mosaic.
It looks like a Pontiac Aztec, first off. Oh, Are you familiar with that car?
Yes, sir.
Pontiac Aztec?
Oh, yeah.
Is it sold in the UK?
No.
I don't know if it was. But
I was just telling someone last night that I came to the US in 2000 for the LA show. Do you remember when the LA show was just before the Detroit show?
Yeah.
In January?
Yeah.
And I was working on old Top Gear, and GM called us up and went, would you like to come to the LA show with us and drive some cars? I can't remember what they wanted us to drive. And go to the LA show, and then we'll fly on to Detroit, where all the actual cars are being revealed, because nothing was revealed at the LA show at that point. And so we went, that sounds great, but do you mind if we just come to the California bit of it, and we'll do some filming on other stuff while we're out there? And even though that was quite a cheeky thing to ask, they went, yeah, no problem.
Yeah.
And then they put us up in shutters on the beach
in Santa Monica.
Santa Monica.
Quite lovely.
Isn't
Schwarzenegger frequents it for breakfast.
That's funny, because when we were there, we were told that De Niro used to go for breakfast there.
I wouldn't be surprised.
And
it's got a good restaurant.
Yeah, lovely restaurant. Yeah. The thing is, we went to this hotel, and you know, I was like 23 or 24 or something, and I was a bit like, Nice hotel.
Good, yeah.
And I used to stay in the hotel some days working on scripts for the next day's filming. We did all sorts of stuff. But the reason I bring this up is because GM had kind of taken over a lot of the hotel and put a lot of guests in there. And they got the concept Aztec parked out the front as their sort of centerpiece. You know, at that hotel, you sort of pull into a courtyard, I think.
Yeah.
And the Aztec concept was parked, which did look better than the production car, but I remember them saying, this will become a production car. Here's the Aztec concept.
Yeah, here it is. Actually, you're right. It did look better. Wait, let me get a better...
I mean, it still looks pretty nutty, and I remember standing there in the yard with...
Well, here's the concept and then the production car side by side.
I mean, it's still quite nuts, and I do remember looking at it with one of my colleagues and just going, what the bloody hell are they doing there?
1999 concept.
Yeah, that's it. It wasn't new. This was the beginning of 2000.
Contrast that.
There we go.
To that.
It's uncanny.
It's real close, isn't it?
Look, even some of the way that the wheel arch trimmings don't quite seem to fit.
Now, in fairness, the Urus does have some better angles.
Yes, that looks quite good there.
The darker the color,
yes,
the better it gets.
The darker the light as well. If it's pitch black, then you're golden.
At night, it's really good.
Because also, some angles, look, you the get, door
every
angles
Urus comes with a free enema.
I noticed that.
and it looks better. Where's the... Here. White is not its favorite flavor. Mm. However, the interior is very nice.
Yeah, I like
this leather... Lamborghini's not gonna like this. It's like the Ford King Ranch leather, which is really good.
Nice. Oh, that's what I was gonna tell you. You said, what am I driving out
here?
Yeah. So I hit up a contact at Ford, and I've got a Ford Expedition.
How do you like it?
Well, I realize it's called Expedition because that's what you have to go on to walk around it. I mean, mother of
it's
Jesus.
Huge.
I took this picture of it parked next to an old shaped Volvo XC90 on the street where I'm staying. And I sent it to some... I've got a little nerdy car chat WhatsApp group with some mates. And I sent it to the group. And one of my mates kind of went, fuck off, that's a toy Volvo. What are you talking about? Because the size difference... And I know there's a little bit of cheaty perspective in this, but look at that. The Expedition is a modern car.
It's huge. Look, if I put it up, it's really... sorry, I can't really focus so well on it, but it's fucking huge difference. It really does... No, that's about right. Yeah, it's massive.
It's a big car.
Yeah, it's a huge car.
I realize you get into it like you're getting into a building because it's got those deployable side steps, which are very nice. I mean, my boy is four and a half, and he finds all of these things tremendously amusing. So that's great. It delights children. But then you sort of stand on the side step, and then you're sort of up there, and you kind of just walk into it like you're going into a house. It's, the doors are...
If you leave, the funny thing about trucks like that and all these full-size SUVs, if you leave Los Angeles...
Yeah. Which we're
they
gonna do.
Seem much more normal.
Yeah.
In the city, though, you're like, this is so dumb. I have a friend who drives a Dodge Ram 2500, a big heavy-duty Ram.
Yeah.
And when he parks it at his office in Santa Monica, I can see it from a quarter of a mile away. It's huge.
Why has the sun gone out? Oh, he's parked his truck.
And then if you go anywhere else, where else are you going?
We're going to Arizona.
Oh yeah, it'll fit right in.
Yeah,
you'll lose it in parking lots there.
Yeah, except my wife always, because she's from Arizona, she always worries about having a big multi-seated car out there because she goes, people just think we're Mormons. But anyway,
no, that car is too nice for Mormons.
It's
Mormons go they go modest, right? If it was like six years old,
I suppose they do. Don't they? Yes, the Haas brand new they all go van. Edition. Yes, the
Haas all go minivan too. You don't have to worry about them.
Yeah, and it's because I live where I live in North London is quite a Jewish area, and there's a big synagogue. I think it's the biggest synagogue in the UK. It's just up the road from us. So there's a lot of Jewish families live around there. A lot of big Jewish families, very Orthodox, and The time when they announced they were cancelling the Toyota Previa in the UK was a dark day for British Jewish families. Yeah. That's what I'm saying. They love a Previa. Love a Honda Shuttle as well, which I don't know if that
we
was...
don't get the Shuttle. Is that
we don't
from
anymore.
The Odyssey?
I think it was the Odyssey, but way back, like 90s. They cancelled it in the 2000s in the UK. So you now have to sort of grey import. If you want a Japanese many-seated people carrier...
Previas rule, by the way. Yeah. The original bubble Previas.
Yeah, they're great, aren't
they?
Yeah,
mid-engine rear-drive van. Fantastic.
Yeah. No, the engineering on that was
really good.
Madness. You go, what? They signed up? Because it's a bespoke engine, I think, isn't it? So it could lie flat under
it was
the floor.
A flat,
2.4
liter. Yeah, flat cylinder. On the floor under the driver's seat. So strange.
When they went to the meeting, I went, wait, so it's going to be what? It's rear-wheel drive? Yeah. Really? Why? Just because? Because it's mid-engined. Obviously, it's rear-wheel drive.
Oh, it's mid-engined. Why is it mid-engined?
Because
shut up.
Because
I think it was to get that really expansive dash, or to have, I don't know, to get a shorter wheelbase. Or
they're also completely indestructible, aren't they, broadly?
I know you. So have one on that. I drove one 1,200 miles off road with no preparation whatsoever. And it was
no oil in it, and it came.
And it was fine. Yeah, it was fine. Unbelievable. Yeah. It was absolutely. Well,
you could have come down to Golders Green near me and sold it to someone, because that's the thing. I swear, a lot of families that dead. Because what do you do if you've had Previas and then suddenly you can't get a Previa officially anymore? Where do you go?
I don't know. You got to start importing them or something.
Yeah.
There's a guy in Oregon who has an all Previa taxi service.
Really?
He's got owns like a dozen of them, and they all have a 500,000 miles on them.
Wow.
Yeah. I got a ride with him once. It was incredible.
Do you find, as you get older, maybe this is just me, but I've had this conversation with TV's James May, because he totally gets this. But as I get older, I get off more on the quality of cars.
100%.
Like, I'm drawn more to Toyotas now than I've ever been.
Yeah, I know.
I was looking at those new Camrys that you've got here, because we don't.
Because they're fast. You see them? They look like race cars. And they're fast.
Well, that's a nice looking car. Yeah. It's better in real life than it is in the pictures. And we are actually going to get it. It's coming to the UK.
Woo-hoo!
For the first time in ages.
Look at this. This is the new Camry. Is like, it's actually like, this one's like a two-tone thing happening, but it's like, it's very aggressive.
Yeah.
And they have, you know, 350 horsepower. Like, they're fast.
But this is because I'm obviously becoming an old fuck. I'm in my 40s now. I find myself looking at that and going, yeah, I've heard there's a fast one, but also, oh, I bet the door fits on that beautiful.
Yeah. I care much more about quality now. Like, I used to be like, oh, horsepower this, and now I don't give a fuck.
Yeah.
Now I, because you can make anything faster, but you can never unshitbox something.
Yeah. Yeah.
If
yeah.
it leaves the factory as a shitbox, it's a shitbox forever.
Yeah. They go, oh, there's a new Fiat, and it's got a massively turbocharged four-cylinder engine that's making 490 horsepower. The doors are made of marzipan, and it runs on jet fuel, and it will explode. And when I was 22, I'd have gone, yes!
Yeah.
Whereas now, I'm like, well, that just sounds ridiculous. But tell me more about that Toyota Avalon, and specifically, tell me how all the dashboard buttons make exactly the same when you press them.
Yeah, no, that kind of stuff is great. I appreciate a Toyota. No,
I do, and it's
sure.
And I saw this morning as well. What's the sort of large-ish SUV that you have?
Toyota?
Yeah, Highlander, isn't it?
The Highlander's gotten bigger. Yeah.
And
my father just bought one, actually.
Oh, really?
A new Highlander.
It's a nice looking car.
It's
again,
pretty nice. Yeah.
Someone has snuck into the Toyota design studio who knows how to draw.
Yeah.
Because they're doing. Have you seen the new Corolla? I don't know. Is it coming here? The new Corolla.
The hatchback.
The sedan is the looker. There you go. 2019 Corolla sedan. And it is...
What, this?
No. Oh, hang on. Yeah,
this,
that. There you go.
This one?
Yeah, look at that.
Here we
but
go.
Look, stance. Look at that. That's a stancy car. It's
that's
sort
not
of,
bad.
Yeah.
I drove that Corolla XRS, the one that had the Elise engine in it.
Okay.
The 2ZZ engine. It was fun as shit.
Really?
Yeah, we're at 8,200 RPM Corolla. It was fantastic.
Well, because that was the... Yeah, that we had that
2ZZ
in the UK.
Engine.
We had the... What do they call it? A home. Like two generations ago, three generations ago.
Yeah, they call it either XRS or XR5 or something.
Yeah, at home it was called the T-Sport, maybe?
Yeah,
and
I don't know.
One turned up at the Evo office one.
And then
there.
They have the hatchback
one. You see,
one
that's not
too.
A bad-looking car.
The hatchback's
either,
not bad.
It's a good color as well.
No.
Yeah.
That is kind of a good color. It's like a cheaper version of the Ford Nitrous Blue.
Oh, yeah.
Nitrous Blue is the shit. That was the best color ever.
Oh, so since we're talking about cars, I've just ordered a new car.
What'd you get?
We're getting a Jaguar I-Pace.
Oh, really?
The future is electric.
Is that the electric one?
Yeah.
They've been running them around LA. They're cool looking.
Yeah. So
really
they do
cool
a really
looking.
Nice. So we've had a load of, this is our family car, it will be, and we've had a load of Merc GLCs recently as our sort of family car. So they were having that color.
Which
the blue,
color?
The blue.
Oh, look at that.
Cesium blue. Well, so we've just had like black
it's
and gray.
These are
and
in
white
person
cars.
Rad looking. They've
yeah,
been running
yeah, yeah.
the reds around LA.
Okay.
And they look hot. The yeah. red is a really sweet looking car.
Well,
it
now.
Looks like the future.
Yeah. It drives like the
have
future.
Have you had a go in one yet?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Does it drive awesome?
Yeah. Brilliant.
Like Tesla ish?
I've never driven a Tesla because I am tainted by association with Top Gear.
Oh, really?
Legal action that happened there. So.
Well, why don't you just get one from someone that's not Tesla?
Well, we did actually in the last series of the Grand Tour. We just borrowed a Model X
yeah.
from a dealer from a second.
Well, have you fucked with Turo here? You know about Turo?
I know about it, but do you know what? On my way over here, I suddenly went, oh, I've forgotten about Turo because I could have borrowed like.
You could have, anything.
Something interesting.
Yeah, Turo's like the Airbnb of cars, and they are full of Teslas in LA.
Well, because that's how you drove a Model 3, wasn't it?
I've driven all Teslas through Turo.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
Because they don't do a lot of press sort of action.
They do, but they're. they tend to gravitate towards those outlets that will most suck up to them.
Right.
I mean, yes. And there are no shortage of them.
Yeah.
But I you should have a go in a Model 3.
I'd love to. I'd really love to. I've seen a few around here because we don't have them at home yet.
Yeah, they're all over around here.
Yeah, yeah. There's loads. Like I saw two when I walked out of the airport.
Yeah. Well, there's a dealer, I mean, 300 yards from here.
Oh, okay.
The Tesla dealer. Right. But the, you know what you know where you see them. If you drive between here and San Francisco,
right.
The number of transporter trucks coming southward full. I mean, you'll see a dozen transporter trucks coming out full of them. There's all over the place. But yeah, Turo's got a bunch of them.
Hmm. So anyway, yeah, the Jag, I drove one, loved it. I really want, because we do not many miles in our family car, and it's all, a lot of it is around London. So our current Merc is almost a year old and it's got 5,000 miles on it.
Yeah.
So, you know.
Yeah, you don't need, you can get electric.
Apart from
that,
we can't charge at home, but there's a public charging point around the corner. That's the only sort of logistical issue.
Can you charge it fast? Does it have fast charging?
Yeah, and there are a few fast chargers. And the network is growing. It's the weak link at the moment, but I'm prepared to front it out and see if we can do it.
Yeah.
But, so we've had these Mercs and things, and they've always been grey or white or black. And I said to my wife, what color would you like the Jag to be? And I showed her some, and I went, because I quite like the blue. And she went, yeah, blue.
Is it this blue?
Yeah. Because she went, well, it's a car of the future, so you might as well have an interesting color.
Yeah.
An interesting car, which is why I love her, because, like, that's the what I would have said.
I'm a firm believer in very fun colors.
Yeah, well,
I like my supercars in gray.
Yeah.
And then my hatchbacks and shit in nuclear colors.
It's a weird logic, though, isn't it? Because I like that. I would like a dressed-down supercar, though, like a dark gray McLaren or something. Painting a 488 Pista dark gray does not make it a subtle car. So it's almost like it's a perverse logic where you're going, I'm slightly embarrassed of the supercar, so I'm just going to make it
Think, you know, I don't know. There's something about, like, I have a Seiko that's, like, gold. And then I have really, really, you know, I have more expensive stuff that's, like, kind of more invisible.
Yeah.
Granted, this is a guy with a Countach with gold wheels. So what can I say?
You're a complex character.
No, but the blue on this electric Jaguar is lovely, as is the red.
Well, do you know what, Oswald? This is going to sound a bit clangy and name droppy amongst car people. But before I chose the color definitively, I spoke to Jaguar chief designer Ian Callum, who I know a little bit,
and name went, drop
clang, and went, what color would you have an eye piece? And he went, well, actually, the one I've got at the moment is red, and I like the red. But, and I really like the blue. And he went, funny enough, all the other people in my studio like the blue, and my next one is going to be blue because I've been persuaded.
Did he do this car?
Yeah.
Oh, he did? Okay.
And someone told me the other day that, you know, there's this thing where chief designers, and they'll get rolled out at the launch of a new car in magazines and on YouTube channels and stuff, talking about it as if they did it. And in fact, you know, design director of a big car company is a manager of other designers, really, and they spend all day. And I know Callum well enough. I talked to him about this. He says, you know, I spend half my life in meetings. It's really frustrating.
Yeah.
I just want
to draw sketches and
and sort of prod around clay models and stuff. But yeah, the design director is really just sets the tone and goes, here's what I want, and approves the sketches and approves the models. They don't get their hands dirty so much. But someone told me with this car that Callum was all over it. Like, this is his
really?
Car.
Yeah, oh, that's good.
Yeah.
He has a really cool... I spoke to him at Pebble Beach. He was such a sweetheart.
Oh, he's brilliant. He's absolutely brilliant bloke.
What's his... is it Mark II?
Yeah, he's got that Mark II that he sort of subtly...
He's got this
updated.
Really sweet, hot-rodded Mark II. Oh, there it is.
Yeah.
Wait, let me get a better picture than that. Got a big... Yeah. Look at this. This is so sexy.
See if you can find pictures of his XJC... Because I think his XJC is even nicer than that.
XJC?
Yeah, you know the convertible
two-door?
Sorry, not convertible, the two-door XJ from the 70s.
Yeah, doesn't Harry have one of them as well?
Yeah.
Why are we not getting large images as well? Ian Callum XJC. Is this it? No?
No, it's got these big retro wheels on it, but they're like sort of racing style. It's not been sort of featured in magazines and stuff the same way.
Okay.
I only know about it because I saw him put it on Twitter once and then asked him about it. But it's absolutely mega.
Oh, that it?
No.
That's got some cool wheels on it. I'm a fan of that. XJC's rule.
Yeah.
Well, here's one the Jag, this thing Jag built for some...
For the guy out of Iron Maiden.
Is that the guy in Iron Maiden?
Yeah.
That thing rules.
Really? See, I hate that.
Really?
Yeah, because I hate the wire wheels. And also,
This thing, where did it go? I forget who the guy is from Iron Maiden.
It's Nico McBrain.
Oh, yeah. You hate the wire wheels.
Yeah, I find them very you know, because that's a late XJ, this is Series 3, isn't it? And,
yeah.
And those, they never had those from new. Or maybe they did actually over here.
No, they didn't.
And
they had regular
They certainly
alloys.
Didn't at home because they had those big pepper, what they call pepper pot alloys. But I saw this at the Geneva show earlier this year. They had it on their stand. And it's got a thing that drives me deranged with fury, which
What's
is
that?
An old car with modern flat blade wiper blades on it. You know the ones I mean?
Oh, you
see what
here,
I mean?
Yeah.
And they always look toss on
with
old
those
cars.
the one individual wiper. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And I know it sort of cleans up the look, but what it just doesn't work somehow because it's an old design. Same with these. Look, it's got projector headlights.
The projector headlights, I get. That would drive me nuts too. But overall, I think this thing looks pretty rad.
It's got sort of, it's a bit of a curate's egg, isn't it? Because it's got some good bits to it, but I just, overall, I find it really
crazy.
Annoying. What is going on?
I don't know. There's a really nutty Jaguar. It's a little too much. Is this, I'm trying to find Ian. This is a good look here.
Yeah, that's good.
These
very
two-piece
good, actually,
wheels?
Isn't it? Yeah, yeah.
I don't know whose this is. I recommend resto modding your Jaguar XJCs, people. But are you sure it's not Harry's car?
No.
Sure it's Ian Callum's?
It's definitely Callum's because he's had it. All done over.
Well, find on your own time,
people. Yeah, exactly. do your own research.
But I'm excited for you to have this iPace because it looks very good. I'm also excited to try one myself. Because
yeah, you should. You really should. It drives beautifully. It really does. I mean,
what's the range?
Well, they're claiming almost 300 miles.
Oh, well, that's
now,
a lot.
Yeah. In the week that I had it, I think I probably realistically was seeing sort of 200 and a bit of change out of it.
That's pretty good stuff.
Well, the way I sold it to my wife, because she was like, how often am I going to have to charge this up? Because she uses our family car more than I do. And so she was a bit like, oh, I don't have to plug it in every day, do I? And she has a 20-mile round-trip commute. And so I went, you'll be able to commute for 2 weeks straight before you charge it up. And she just went, fine, let's get one.
Yeah.
You know, the perception of electric cars, it's like that thing where people are obsessed with them not going very far, and everybody, I mean, certainly in the UK,
well, it's always
drives,
about the what if I need to,
yeah,
same thing with the giant expedition. What if I need to carry seven people? And you know, it's like, well, how often do you really need to do that?
What if I need to tow a boat? You know, what are you talking about?
You don't own a boat
in London, like, exactly. It's the thing, it's just like, but what if I had to, you know, rescue some orphans off a mountain? You don't do that.
Do you get a sweet little tax credit as well in London for having that?
No, it is exempt at the moment. You don't pay any road tax. You know we pay road tax. I guess you license plates you pay for every year, do you?
So we
just do, it's separate to your number plate, but you pay a road tax related to engine size, CO2 emissions and stuff.
Yeah,
but electric cars at the moment, the road tax is zero.
That's good.
It will change, obviously, because the government doesn't.
And it's sort of a joke, right? Because like there's some various plug-in hybrids where it's like the McLaren or whatever, you can go 12 miles or something.
Yeah.
It's like just enough to clear that road tax hurdle.
I'm not sure about the McLaren, but there are plenty of cars where you kind of go, now, come on.
Yeah.
You're cheating a bit there because on the official cycle.
I can't remember if it was the P1 or the 918 or one of those cars can go just enough electric range.
Well, it might be. Yeah, you could. You can go into the centre of London where we have a congestion charge, which is now, God, how much is it now? It's like 12 quid or something, I think. Or is it about to become that? It's expensive to just drive into the centre of the city, and that charging zone is going to get bigger and bigger. They're expanding it out.
I haven't been to London in a while. Is there an actual, like, toll booth that you go through and pay, or is
no,
it done?
No, it's all done on cameras.
It's all done on cameras.
ANPR, automatic number plate recognition. Oof. So, yeah. And then you get a letter in the post if you don't pay.
Yeah.
And it's all a bit annoying. But
the surveillance state is alive and well.
Yeah, it is a bit, I suppose. I always wonder about things like that. And, you know, people go, oh, you know, we have to worry about what Facebook's got on you. And I sort of think, I don't think I'm that interesting. I don't think there's anything that I'll just go, what's he doing now? It's like James May had this idea that he wanted to, you know, Amazon does, people who bought this also bought this.
Yeah, yeah.
And he wanted to buy loads and loads of copies of Richard Hammond's last book. But every time he bought one, he would also buy a dildo. And he was serious about this. He thought it would be hilarious. But then he went, hang on a
really
minute.
That's really fucking
going to cost me a fortune in books and dildos. Just so that when people go, Richard Hammond's new book, people who always bought this also bought,
that
oh my God, the Alien Invader. What
so
the hell is going
funny. On? That's really funny.
That's James for you.
Bring that back, James. That's great.
Well,
do it.
Everyone now.
Sell your fucking Ferrari and
just buy dildos and books. I think he was more annoyed at the fact that he'd be having to waste all this money on Hammond's book. He didn't really care about the dildos.
You could probably return the books.
Yes, dildos. They have a fairly strict policy on the return of
a lot of people. Dildos. People who bought this book also bought these dildos. They then returned the book.
Someone kept sending this is not a joke, but someone kept sending dildos to the Grand Tour office addressed to Jeremy.
Really?
Yeah. We could never figure out what was going on. It was
that
really
is
weird.
Awesome.
Not just dildos, butt plugs and various other bits.
Do you think it was from this, they were all from the same person?
Don't know.
Do you think there was like a Facebook group dedicated to crowdfunding?
Send Clarkson sex toys .com.
Dude, he says shit a lot that is, you know, either he means it or he doesn't and he's joking, but people get fucking angry. Didn't someone dump a truckload of manure on his front lawn at some point?
Oh, yeah, they did. Now, who was that? That was like Friends of the Earth or some affiliate to that. Yeah, just because they got sort of sick of him kind of, I don't know.
Promoting gas cars.
Yes, exactly. They perceived that he was killing the environment, so they dumped a load of horse manure outside his house, which is not as good as... They used to do these Top Gear live shows, which were a sort of separate thing. I mean, licensed by the BBC to use the name, but they were run by a separate company. And this company was run by a guy, I won't name him, but he is, and his company, I did work for them as well. They're the worst payers of anyone I've ever worked for. They take forever to pay your invoices. And as a freelancer, you know, it's really annoying when that happens.
That's the worst thing you could be, pretty much, for a freelancer.
And I learned not to take it personally because I discovered that they were doing the same trick on Jeremy, Richard and James. So it's like, you're even dicking around the talent. And Jeremy got so annoyed about this that he got our old tame mechanic from the show, who also used to do tech stuff on the live shows, Steve, to get a khaki old rusty van and write really rude slogans about the guy who ran the company all down the side of it and then go and dump it outside his house. But unfortunately, Steve the mechanic got the address wrong and dumped it outside this guy's neighbor's house. But it had this guy's name on it, so they knew immediately what was going on and went round and went, excuse me, I think that van over there is for you. And it had, I think it had the C word on it. So it was quite a strong van, you know. Not one you'd want to open your curtains and go, oh, it still says that on
it.
But
yeah. That's so funny.
And then Jeremy got word of it. It was like, oh, I can't even trust you to a simple thing. Like, get the right house.
The wrong house. Oh, my God. That's fucking good. I like that very much. Well, should we answer some of our viewer questions?
Yeah.
All right, live folks. You've been collectively getting into Super Chat for about an hour now. I'm going to give you 10 more minutes to leave us a question, then I'm going to cut it off, and Porter and I are going to go through some of these. Let's see. Ding Bong says, really enjoying TST. Thank you. I'm 6'2 and a deuce and a half, so roughly my size. Currently have a Volvo S80 T6. Love it. Looking for a fun, long-distance GT car. Thinking a C6 Grand Sport, that's a Corvette, Richard, or a Volkswagen Golf R. Boy, are these comparable. Yeah. Any suggestions or opinions? Fun, long-distance GT cars. C6 Grand Sport is going to be among them.
Very disparate.
Super different. Yeah.
Hungry. I like Mexican food. Should I have spaghetti bolognese or ice cream? What, your question doesn't make sense.
I know exactly how you feel. Suggestions or opinions on a fun long distance GT car? Well, look, C6 Grand Sport is a good option. Big trunk, good ride.
Big trunk?
Yeah.
Really?
You have a big trunk. Ah. You can fit a ton of shit in the back of a Corvette.
Ah.
A ton of shit.
Not really.
As long as it's not a convertible. The hardtop one with the hatchback. Yeah, yeah.
Or you could have that nice aero wagon thing done to it, couldn't you?
What? People didn't like those, but I did.
I thought, like them.
The general consensus was that it was not an improvement.
No.
I thought it was cool as shit.
It was mega, yeah.
It's really cool. Yeah. And actually, as a way to change the look of a car without it's like you do not much and a ton at the same time.
Yeah.
Because literally all you have to do is change the hatch.
Yeah, yeah.
It's the only part you change.
Clever about it.
Yeah, and it changes the entire look of the car. What's interesting about it is it makes visibility way worse. And it also doesn't add anything to your luggage capacity. But I think it looks really cool.
Good afternoon.
I'm a
fan.
I
wonder, could you make my Corvette the same or worse? Yes, we can, sir.
Yes, we can. I'm a
big fan of Arrowwagon. Yeah, you could go Arrowwagon for sure.
Golf R, they're lovely, but I mean,
it's a GT car.
Also, it's a sort of long distance. To me, is not necessarily the same as fun, is it? Because that implies just driving in a straight line.
Right. I would say maybe an E92 M3 with a V8.
Ooh,
that's a good option. Similar price to a
C6 one of those. Oh, C63s.
C63 nice, Mercedes. They're good cruisers,
or an E63. Yes. Ooh, they're good cruisers.
An AMG E-Class. Yeah. Mm. Yeah. And if he likes an S80, he's already into huge sedans.
Yeah.
E63 is a good one. E63 wagon is even better.
Oh, yeah.
That's a fun long distance GT car.
Yes.
Yeah. E63 wagon. There we go. That's where we leave it. M0128 says, get Ethan Tufts on the podcast. All right. Ethan, email me. people just want to plug stuff. That's okay. Vlad Tataranu. I love Smith and Sniff. Looking forward to it every Friday. How much time does writing and producing it take, and how can people support it?
Thanks, Vlad. Writing. It's not written at all. The most we ever do with writing is that sometimes I think of something I want to tell Johnny and I make a note of it in my phone, and then I found out he does the same. And we never compare notes before we start.
You should trade phones.
Yeah. Well, we did talk about sort of like doing kind of like writing things on bits of paper and swapping them. But then it's like, is this all getting a bit too produced? And it kind of seems to work with us just talking. And so we genuinely do. The biggest hassle is rigging the minicams, which, as you know, can be a complete ball ache. But Johnny does that because they're his cameras and he knows what he's doing. And I sort of go and get some coffee while he's doing that and bring it back. And then drive and we talk shit. And we always talk for too long. And then we hand it all over to our editor, James, who's very patient. And he just cuts together the bits that make him laugh. So
how can they support it?
So we sort of finished for the year now. We'll be back next year and sort of hopefully in January. And we, fingers crossed, have got some sponsors on board.
Oh, right.
So there is no, the best way you can support it is just by liking and subscribing.
Like and subscribe. All right. Oh, and Vlad has a part two. How was the transition from Top Gear to the Grand Tour for you and the staff members that went with you from the old show? And how are you all getting along with the team that remained at the old show?
Transition was fine, I suppose. It's like, you know, new office and just remember to go to a different place.
Slightly better office, I imagine.
Yeah.
When I learned that that trailer was not a joke and was your actual office, that was a real... fourth wall moment for me. It's like, hang on a minute. That shithole was really the office.
Well, that was our studio office. Yeah, we had a slightly less shitty office in London, but we still ruined it. And we've ruined the Grand Tour office. I mean, it's full of crap. I was saying, there's an old colleague of mine who lives out here now, one of the guys who was a researcher on the Grand Tour. And I went for a beer with him last night. And I was telling him, he was going, how much more crap's built up since I left? And I was like, oh my God, you wouldn't believe. I needed some bubble wrap the other day to wrap up something I'd sold on eBay, and we hadn't got any bubble wrap, but I realized we had got a stack of about 18 alloy wheels that were all wrapped in bubble wrap, so I just cut some off that. I was like, why have we got these alloys for old BMWs in the corner? No one even knows. And I think
it just showed up.
Yeah, it's almost like, yeah, we're a magnet for car-related crap.
That's so funny.
Is this a starter motor? And if so, what for? It's just, dreadful. Real mess in there.
That's
now.
So funny.
But yeah, no, it was ever thus. How are we all getting along with the Top Gear team? Fine. Yeah, great. I mean, I saw Alex, who's the series editor of Top Gear, the other day for dinner, and he's a happy guy now. He's sort of got a new...
Because he spent the summer doing nothing. A little fucking shake-up over there, didn't they?
Yeah, so they've got two new hosts.
I feel bad for Rory. Rory got screwed.
It's a bit sad.
I think he was doing a good job.
I thought he was doing a good job, and I don't quite understand. I don't know what was going on behind the scenes that led them to that conclusion, but
I'm sure it was political of some kind.
Yeah, I mean, what's interesting to me is that I thought for many years that when we were doing the show, the BBC was sort of wearily tolerant of what they perceived to be our kind of laddishness. You know, this kind of, oh, it's three blokes just, you know, doing men stuff and being annoying. And that they would want to move away from that kind of pure mannishness. But what they actually seem to have done with this new lineup is to kind of double down on it, because both those guys they've got in, You know, one
I've
of them.
I've never heard of either of
them. Well, no, I was thinking they are quite well known in the UK, but yes, they're not internationally famous. They're not Matt LeBlanc. But that,
yeah, well, when I heard Joey was leaving, I spoke to Harris briefly.
Did you notice that Harris always calls Matt LeBlanc Joey?
He always calls him Joey, and that's why I always call him Joey too now.
I was like, do you do this to his face?
Yeah, he does.
Does he?
Yeah, he does. He does. It's funny. It's a really funny bit, actually. It's one of the fun. It's like he's now done it. You know, it starts out funny, becomes not funny, and then it comes back to being funny.
That's the best sort of funny. Yeah.
But I asked him. I was like, dude, put in a fucking good word. You know, hook it up. Maybe, right? Get the Pharaoh over there. And they said they really, really, really did not. They wanted someone very English. He used the word very English. He said not just English, like very English. Okay. I was like, okay.
Well, the former captain of the England cricket team is about as English as
that's as English as it gets.
Find out he owns a tea plantation as well. He's super English, but
most English person.
So he's not as well, because I think to American ears, I don't know if you've heard him talking, but he's from the north of England, so he's got quite a sort of northern accent. So he's not sort of good evening. Yes, I've just been playing some cricket and I'm absolutely parched for a cup of tea or maybe some warm brown beer if you have it with twigs floating in it. He's not. He's like he's Yorkshire, so he's like proper Yorkshire. All right. Yeah, doing that. Yeah,
oh,
yeah,
really?
So, yeah, and so is and then Paddy McGuinness, the other guy who's a comedian and a TV host, is from Lancashire, so sort of broadly the same kind of latitude,
yeah,
but different longitude, other side of the Pennines. If you were English, you'd go, bloody hell, the War of the Roses. You know, these two counties basically fought each other. But yeah, he's also northern. So they're not kind of English in the way that you might perceive.
Oh, okay.
It's not Hugh Grant kind of
stammering.
Yeah, exactly. They're more kind of all right.
At least now Chris gets to be short Jeremy, I guess, you know.
I suppose. But yeah, no, in terms of us getting on, we get on very well. In fact, there was a really nice thing that happened over the summer, because Top Gear was on hiatus because they were finding their new hosts, with Matt having announced he was leaving. And so they weren't making the show. And Andy, our exec, rang Alex, their exec, and said, have you got any spare members of staff? Because we're really short and we need some new people.
That's nice.
And there was a little kind of like in sport, you know, you get like free transfer stuff. So, yeah, we had one or two people sort of because we took an editor as well. We had one of their editors came in.
How kind.
Stuff. Yeah. I mean, obviously, we were paying them. It wasn't like...
No.
But, yeah, and it was understood. We will because we will come to the end of our... need for them, just as you're firing back up, and that sort of thing. They've gone back, and now Top Gear have taken two of our old researchers or assistant producers.
Oh, that's nice.
Because again, we've wound down.
Keep these folks working.
So it's all one big. I mean, it's not like one big happy family. We're two separate productions. But
no, it's like you can have Easter at Dad's house and Christmas at Mom's house. Yeah. Miguel says modern cars and engines are becoming so techy and complicated. What car and or engine can you still buy in a showroom that is as basic and simple as possible? What is the most basic car?
You can buy the Dacia Sandero. Have you seen that?
I know that it's James May's favorite car.
And they're about as simple as it gets, I suppose.
I mean, you can buy a couple cars in America that are ridiculously simple, too. I mean, here's a Dacia Sandero.
See, that's a fancy one. That's a Stepway. Yeah.
What's the most basic one?
Well, if you can find one there. See, look, that's about as basic as it goes.
That's fucking heinous.
Well, they've started coloring in the bumpers now. They used to have.
Yeah, I mean, here in America, you can buy a Nissan Versa Note.
Can you still buy that?
I think so.
Wow.
Yeah, you can buy.
That's quite an old.
A Versa Note you can buy in America. You can buy a Hyundai Accent is really cheap and basic.
Now, who's that guy? I think I've heard you mentioning him on this show. Is it? He's the one who checks shipping notes and comes up with random bits of trivia.
Oh, Bozy. Yeah, Bozy is my homie. No, so Bozy, who's on Twitter, is Hoonable. Mm. You guys should fucking hire him as a researcher. He is a genius. I love this dude. And his brother Boyan is the man as well. Bozy is a Serbian immigrant who came here as a refugee and as a child. And he is the fucking smartest person I know. And he goes through import documents and like crazy parts manuals and stuff.
So this is why I bring it up.
Anything.
He was talking on Twitter the other day about, is it the Chevrolet Express van?
Yeah.
And he was talking about the parts in it and what they were first used in. And it was sensational. I mean, it's super nerdy stuff. It's high frequency nerdery, but it's fantastic.
Bozi, Bozi. People ask me all the time, like, who's that fucking guy you're talking about?
Tatarevic?
Bozi Tatrovic.
Tatrovic.
Yes. Trivic. Okay. He does everything from he's bought and sold cars. He works on cars. This little Miata here is the car that I think that's me getting out of it. This is the car we race in AER.
Mm.
And he writes for Road and Track. He's written for Jalopnik, and he has the best nerdy fucking Twitter feed ever.
Yeah.
And
in terms of simplicity, I was thinking that one of those Chevy Express fans sounds like that.
They are the most primitive shitboxes.
Yeah. Well, but the guy who was asking the question, he wanted simplicity. So.
Yeah. I think they had an uptick in sales recently.
Really?
Someone, I think it was Bozy, I forget who it was, posted like something on Twitter that was like, here's all the cars that the Express outsold, like all Jaguar, Maserati, and Land Rover together or something. Yeah. It was ridiculous.
But I was looking, I was going, well, there's something, because I think US car makers do this very well, that sort of, take well-proven stuff and just reuse it endlessly to just get the not only get the money's worth out of it, but it's also, if it ain't broke, why fix it?
We did that more back in the day. We did it a lot, like, you know, the 3800 V6 engine that went everything. We reuse shit forever.
Because I saw someone, I was in a supermarket car park this morning, and someone drove by an old El Camino, like, and it was just, you know, flattened out paint, ruined. You know, it wasn't a show car, it was just obviously someone's car.
Yeah,
but I thought, now, I bet that car is not too much trouble to keep going, because there's not much to it. It's simple. It was making a lovely sort of wet V8 burble.
Is a really good description. Blah, 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 blah. It's a good descriptor.
And as it went by, I just thought, because that'll be what? That's a small block.
Yeah, it's a 350 V8 and a 3-speed or 4-speed automatic gearbox and a basic solid rear axle. There's nothing
in that car is an unknown quantity.
Nothing.
And you can get all the bits for it.
Yeah,
you can just mend
the
it
most
hammer.
Basic mechanical ability can keep that going.
There's something weirdly appealing about that. I don't know.
The most modern version of that would be our Crown Victoria.
Yes.
Which you can get for $2,000 right now. And will run for a million miles with very basic maintenance.
Someone down the street I'm staying on in Venice has got a Buick Roadmaster.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the 90s one.
Yeah, yeah.
I bloody love it.
Wood-sided, a wagon.
Yeah. But I can't figure out if it's just someone who is a bit down on their luck and that's just their car, or if it's a hipster.
Could go either way.
Exactly.
Truly could go either way, because the Roadmaster is the upscale version of that Caprice platform. I don't know. It could be, you should ask him next time. Leave a note.
Yes.
I'm sure he'd love to talk to you about
hipster?
It.
Or just hang around with binoculars looking for sailor taps.
Hipsters
and a beer.
Rarely admit that they're hipsters. No. Be careful. Let's see. John O. Twist says, all right, Matt, it's a work day now. Thank you for understanding that joke. Small question for Mr. Porter. What insidious car has Aaron Gold arranged for you, which we covered? Have you spotted any meth labs?
No, sadly, no.
No. I think you have. You just haven't noticed.
That was a backdraft, wasn't it? Because I think last time I was on the show, we were talking about meth labs.
Well, have you noticed in Venice the real upturn of street parked RVs that people are living in?
Yes.
Crazy, right?
So my mate I was out with last night, who has just moved here in the summer, said that there's an app or a website that was for legitimate RV fans, sort of, you know, pointing out nice campsites they could stay in Nevada or whatever.
Yeah.
But it's been kind of hijacked by these street RV people, and it's now used to sort of say, look, the cops won't bother you here.
Yeah.
This is a good place to park because there's no restrictions or parking permits or whatever. This one, you don't have to move your car for street cleaning. You know, it's all that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
So that these people can just bed in.
Straight up living in their RVs in the streets.
And are they meth labs in there, or is that just...
No, they're just let's call them the almost homeless.
Right, yeah.
You know what I mean? You can't, I guess... I don't know if you call someone who lives in an RV on the street homeless or not, but it's like they're almost homeless.
Yeah.
It's a bit – I don't mind it. I don't mind someone living in their RV in the street, except it takes up like 3 fucking parking spaces in an area where we're short on parking spaces already.
There are a lot around Venice, aren't there, as well? A lot of RVs.
If you're going to be homeless, this is a good place to be homeless.
Well,
the weather's nice.
Warm, yeah.
Yeah. What does VT stand for was the last one. VT is the term you use to refer to as your films.
Yes, videotape is what it stands for. And it's it's quaint, isn't it? And the bits that were shot on location and edited together, which we sometimes call films, but they're the bits where they're out in the field, basically, as opposed to studio bits.
Yeah.
Funnily enough, my publisher as on that Bombshell book about working on Top Gear, when he reviewed the finished book, he went, do you think we should put an explainer in for what VT stands for? And I went, no, everyone knows that. And it's the thing I've been asked more than anything. And
I kind of, need a glossary. Next yeah, book, glossary. Glossary. Speaking of which, the Roy Lanchester book was very funny.
Thank you.
Yeah. I forgot to mention in your intro, but your...
I forgot to say, oh, I should mention that in the show.
Yeah, he wrote a fictional autobiography of a fictional automotive journalist named Roy Lanchester. What's the name of the book, actually?
It's called How to Be a Motoring Journalist.
Yeah, How to Be a Motoring Journalist.
It's a sort of willfully misleading title, because yeah. It's not. And there's a kind of... I didn't really follow it through, but there was on Twitter sometimes I allude to the fact that Roy is kind of pissed off that the publisher made him call it that, because it sounds like it might be a guide and he doesn't want anyone to become a car journalist, because then they might steal his gigs. So.
It's a funny book. I really liked it. Charlie says hot dicks. I'll say that for $2.
For $2.
Hot dicks. Sean says, this is how
more
you earn,
of that sort
this
of
is how you earn a living.
$2 to say.
$2 to say hot dicks. Yeah, sure. Okay. Thanks for the years of content. Sean says, my girlfriend had a turbo NA6 Miata. Well, okay, whatever that means. She sold when she moved to California. Thinking to get an S2000 or a new Miata to replace it. Want a stick shift convertible. I'm 6'3" and fit better in the S2000. Is the S2000 too old? Well, no. If you get a nice S2000, it's not too old. But a nice S2000 costs a lot of money, actually, now.
Yeah, I was always a bit disappointed by the S2000 somehow. Never quite. Although apparently they're really sensitive to alignment. You've got to make
they
sure.
They are very sensitive to alignment.
Really, really sensitive.
And if you do a coilover suspension, they're really sensitive to like your shock settings and stuff like that.
Okay, yeah.
They're nice cars. If you think you want one and you can find the right one, you'll probably be happy with it. Mm. It's not that it's too old, because like a Honda from 2003 that has been well taken care of will continue to take care of you, yeah. I think.
Or have you thought about a BMW Z4M?
Ooh.
Or a Z3M? Do they do stick here?
They do.
Yeah.
Yeah, the Z3M, Z4M are both nice.
Sorry, Z. Yes.
Z. Yeah, you got to say Z in America, Richard. And if he's 6'3", he won't fit in the Z3M very well. The Z4 will be much better.
Yes.
That'll be tight in the 3.
Yeah.
Is the S2000 too old? No, I don't think it's too old. The key is just to find the right one. There's two kinds of S2000s. Really mint expensive ones, and ones that have had the absolute shit beat out of them and you should never buy.
Yeah.
Also, there's almost nothing in between.
Too old? It depends on condition and stuff, doesn't it?
Much more. I mean, a Honda from the mid-2000s is as reliable as a vehicle gets. Yeah. You know? Yeah. So I would say, no, it's not too old. But also, the ND Miata, the new one, is pretty nice. If you can afford the new one with the new engine.
Oh, I heard that's really, really good.
It's really nice. It, yeah. I had a go in it for 5 minutes. I haven't had a real go yet. We'll try yet. We'll try soon. But yeah, I like those two. Brett Barber says, good evening. Hello. I've recently purchased a high mileage Mini GP2. Oof, good grief. for $14,000. Fiesta ST money. What modifications would you do to the Mini? As a daily driver, thanks for your time. So oh
now,
boy,
was this the one GP2 that had? I mean, near as damn it, no suspension whatsoever.
Yeah, like teeth rattling. Yeah,
I remember going along a road that had sort of undulations in it, and I had the window open, and I remember thinking if I wasn't wearing a seatbelt, there was a very real chance I could just be thrown out of the window, because
it's one of the
no
stiffest
travel.
Cars ever.
Holy
built.
Mother of God! It's so the first thing, daily driver. Jesus Christ, put some softer springs and shocks on it.
Softer springs and shocks. Maybe even downsize the wheels and put more sidewall.
And then
a Mini with two big wheels is a disaster.
Yeah,
you use
yeah.
small wheels on a Mini.
It's one of those eternal problems, isn't it, where as a car enthusiast and somebody who likes driving, you kind of go, yes, smaller wheels because you know it drives better.
Yeah.
But in the back of your head, you're going, yeah, but it does look really
big
cool
rim.
Big rims.
Big yeah. rims! No, so. I say smaller wheels and tires, and like Richard said, softer shocks. Coilover suspension, set it soft. And also, save your money for servicing, because a high-mileage Mini has a potential to be a complete nightmare.
Mm.
Every high-mileage Mini, not say that this person's high-mileage Mini is bad, but all I'm saying is every high-mileage Mini I've been around has been a complete nightmare.
Yeah.
Because that car is not built in Germany.
No, sorry about that.
So it's built in England with an engine from Brazil.
That's right.
California says... How are Roy Lanchester and Troy Queef doing? Give us an update on those Chaps.
So, what I gotta say, because obviously they're fictional characters who live in my head, but if you want a pretend update on them, Roy, it's the day before Christmas, so Roy is already drunk as a lord and has probably been sick on his own television.
It was the potatoes.
Yeah, it's the potatoes. He's run himself over in a press car. Troy Queef is out helmsmaning something across Eastern England, as he always does, using too many words to explain simple things. Someone, the person below has paid $50.
They have. That happens sometimes. A very generous man named Nathan has given us $50. You know why? Because he saw that my Safari 911 has its engine apart right now.
Yes, I saw this.
The bad news is, no, the good news. The good news is I do not need new pistons and cylinder liners.
Hooray.
This is good.
Because I brought you some. Now you're gonna take your
they were laying around
back.
The Grand Tour office. Yes. I just found them.
They're pistons for various different engines. I think one of them's a Brazilian mini piston.
But because I had mentally already spent the money on them,
right,
I elected to shift those funds to do the bottom end in the car. So I'm actually going to get it back in the second week in January with a completely new engine in it.
There's nothing better than mentally assigning some money that then doesn't need to be spent.
Right?
Because then you've got free money.
Totally.
In the world of
fake money. Yeah. That is man math.
When I had my Jag XJR, which is a lovely car, and it never gave me a lick of trouble. But every time I took it for service, I assumed they would find something wrong. So I always had in my head, this is going to cost me £1,000.
Yeah.
And it never did, even
close.
That's
fantastic.
So I always felt up on the deal.
Yeah. My Safari was a victim of poor timing. It was going to need all this shit sooner or later.
Yeah.
It just needed it 3 months after it should have needed it. That was all.
Have I told you that I bought a 911?
Did you? What kind?
997 Gen 2, sir.
Oh, nice.
C2S.
Oh, lovely. Yeah.
Black over black.
Good. Good choice.
Yeah.
Great car.
Daily driver.
Is it?
Pretty much, yeah. Yeah,
perfect.
I mean, it is, because that's what I wanted. I'll be honest, I wanted a 911 for years and years and years and years, and then I just finally kind of went, fuck it, I'm going to get one.
Yeah.
And it was also because I borrowed a 997 Gen 2 GT3 RS, which is
the best car ever.
Yes, it genuinely is my favorite
car. Best car
I've
ever.
Forgotten that it's my favorite car.
Yeah.
And I had one, the Porsche have one on their heritage fleet in the UK.
They have a heritage fleet.
Yes.
Harris told me he borrowed one from them. Might even have been the same one.
Yeah.
And he said because it had appreciated to over sticker, they were just going to keep it.
they could
call it a heritage fleet.
Yeah, it's the old press car, and they just went, let's just keep it.
The 997-2 GT3 RS I had as a press car was the one that Hammond sailed off the track at VIR.
I really?
Yeah. I got it like 6 months after him.
So that was the straw that broke the, because I just went, oh God, this is brilliant. And obviously I can't really run to one of those without getting divorced. So
yeah.
I was like, no, screw it. I'm just going to go and get a 911.
But now that you have it, it's a shockingly reasonable proposition, isn't it?
Yeah, it's great.
Yeah.
It's just
an awesome car.
It just goes and stops and does everything. And it's like it can do the boring commutey bits.
Yeah.
And the thing is as well, because I was sort of like, oh, do I stretch it to a 991? And then, but what I like about the 997 is the size.
The size is better.
It's a little car.
Yeah. You don't, for the 991's a lovely car, but for all its extra size, it doesn't have any more space. It's the same amount of space, just in a bigger package.
Well, there's probably a bit more room in the back, which is great, because one of the things about having a 911 and having children is you can put your children in the 911. At the moment, my kids are 4 and 1, so that's okay.
So that's doable.
As they get bigger, I may have to get a 991.
Or a Panamera.
I saw my kind of spirit Porsche this morning of the 991s parked up in Venice Beach. 991 Carrera T, black over black, no side stripe, because I don't
lovely.
Really like that. I like stealth mode. And it was just perfect in every way, just a really lovely, discreet spec. It had the back seats and the stereo put back in, because that's just... Damn,
the Carrera T is awesome.
It's unbelievably lovely.
And my friend Batim at BBI Autosport said that with about four parts, he said $2,000 to $4,000, he can make 500 horsepower reliably in that engine.
Okay. Yeah, there's a company called Litchfield in the UK doing something similar.
They've got that crazy GTR they're selling, right?
Yeah. But I got out of a GT2 RS and into a Carrera T, driving on the road in Scotland, beautiful roads, and I just preferred the T by a mile.
Just because it was more usable?
More usable, and it was manual as well.
Yeah.
And the GT2 obviously is paddle. My
GT2
is paddles,
like a psycho death machine.
It's just too much.
Yeah.
I mean, I think if you're Chris Harris or some kind of, helmsman of that sort of, size of testicle, then you probably could get more out of it. But I was like, apart from the else, it's not that you're sort of going, oh God, I'm going to die if I use all of this. But it's also the opportunities to unleash its incredible ability.
Yeah.
They're so few and far between, because just the roads aren't unsighted enough for you to really.
Yeah, these roads were built when a 300 horsepower car was very fast.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so you just kind of go, well, I could sort of floor it towards that corner,
yeah.
but then I'll be arriving at that corner at 200 miles an hour. And I don't know what's around it.
Yeah.
And, well, in fact, as Monkey Harris
as
learned.
As Harris learned, yeah. it could be a pickup truck making a 3-point turn.
Yeah. So, God, that's a shame.
Poor GT3. I'm glad he's okay. Poor GT3.
Do you know what's really spooky was I was about to text him that evening before to ask him how his GT3 touring was going, because I basically browsed those about every week because I really, really
They're
want
fucking
those.
Sweet.
Yeah.
I saw a GT3 touring club on the hill yesterday. I drove them back to back, the Carrera T and the GT3 touring.
Yeah, yeah, I saw that.
And if you don't have if you're on a tighter road, the Carrera T's faster. If you don't have the room, if you're on an open, more open space, then I mean, if you can afford the GT3 touring, get that. Yeah, yeah. But like, if not, you really don't feel like you're missing out with the Carrera
when
T.
When I first drove the Carrera T, Porsche brought, it was last Christmas, in fact, Porsche brought two left-hand drive ones over to the UK, and I had one for Christmas. And I then started working out if I sold my Porsche and my Defender that I could buy one. And then I thought, no, that's just stupid.
Yeah.
Mainly because I don't want to sell my Land Rover.
But have you scratched the itch with the S?
What, the 911 itch?
Yeah, yeah, with your... Yeah.
Well, I've scratched it, but it's just now it's just a permanent itch, and I'll sort of go, I probably never won't have a 911 unless, you know, circumstances dictate that would be a silly thing to have. Because that does cost money to run. Like, I had it serviced, just a regular, but the big service, plus it needed two new back tyres, and that was £1,200.
Yeah, and expensive.
And then one of the back lights had got a little crack in it, which was letting water in.
Uh-oh.
And the backlight was full of water, and that was 500 and something pounds for the backlight. And you just go, really? Okay. But, you know, again, in my head, I knew it was going to be an expensive car to keep. You can't. It's a 10-year-old car.
Yeah.
It's always going to need little things doing.
Yeah.
The fact that it feels absolutely good for another 10 years with not really falling apart, touch wood, is a testament to that's why you have a 911, isn't
it? Yeah, yeah.
Because they are.
My 87 feels like a quality item.
Yeah.
You know, that's...
Did you know what? My next thing is not necessarily to get rid of the 997, but just to then get a 964 and 993.
You just
I need
keep
some
it,
air cool
just
in my
keep
life.
It going. I know.
I saw a beautiful 964. I was slightly obsessed with 964s at the moment.
But you and everybody else.
I know. It's annoying, isn't it?
I know.
Forever.
They
I know.
Couldn't sell them 10 years ago.
I know.
And now everybody wants one.
I wish I'd bought
one.
Seven of them.
I know.
Just squirreled them away.
Uh huh.
Yeah.
You and everybody else, my friend.
God damn it.
Yep. Let's see. Oh, Alan, thank you for your donation. I appreciate that. Sleepy996 says, Mr. Hotel Slippers wants to wish you guys a Merry Christmas. Thank you, Mr. Hotel Slippers. David Musso says, oh, thank you for... I took him for a ride around Road Atlanta in the Jeep Trackhawk. You're welcome. The Road Atlanta, the Trackhawk was hysterical. You had to go in one of those?
No.
That is the stupidest, silliest vehicle ever built, and it's really, really good fun.
Is it 707 horsepower?
Yeah, it's a Jeep with 700 horsepower. It's really dumb, and it's also really
madness.
Fun. Dante Zero says, I've been thinking about engine swapping my NB Miata. Thoughts on putting in a Motus MST V4? I don't know what that is. Motus MST V4. What engine would you put in a Miata? Oh, it's a bike motor.
V4. Now, V4s are generally...
Oh, wait. Is this the four-cylinder LS motor?
Sawn an LS in half?
Maybe. I don't know. I think it's just a bike motor. Motus MST. Yeah, look. Motus part of it was Pratt and Miller. They race GM. And this is a pushrod 90-degree V4. This has got to
so
be a half an LS motor. Yeah, it's got to be what this is. I'm pretty sure this is what this is.
It's the inverse of that. You know those Jaguar V6s that it's just a V8 with two
cylinders
blanked off effectively? They should have left them open. You could have stored bottles in them.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know what it takes to put in a Motus MST V4. I don't know if it fits. I don't know how that works.
Yeah. I'm also going to ask why, because V4s are rough old things, aren't they?
They're
not very balanced.
No. I mean, I think if you're going to swap an NB and you want to do something really weird for a motorcycle, get one of those BMW K1600s with the 1.6 liter inline six.
I see your 1.6 liter inline six, and I raise you the... 2.3 liter three cylinder Triumph engine out of those Rocket three bikes.
Triumph Rocket.
Unbelievable. I was walking down the street a few months ago and there was this unholy noise. You know, when you sort of hear something from behind you, and as a car nerd, you can kind of go, hello, that's an M5 or that's a 911.
And I look at that engine.
It makes the most extraordinary sound. And I was kind of like, what is that? And so yeah. There was this bloke on this massive bike going by.
Yeah. I think, would you say a 2.3 liter?
I think it's 2.3 triple, yeah.
Wow. And it looks awesome with that header.
Yes, it does. So there you go. Get one of those.
I just was in the canyons the other day, and I heard a guy riding an uncorked CBX. One of the, you know those?
No.
The Honda CBX has a that was a 1,000cc transverse inline six motorcycle.
Yes, I have seen those.
And it sounds crazy with a straight pipe on it.
Really?
Like an F1 car. Crazy.
Really?
Yeah.
Does it rev to something insane?
It revs like 11.
Right.
It's not high for a bike, but it's high for a, you know, a straight six. Yeah. I think, if you want to swap in a bike motor, I think the BMW inline six, I don't know about the Modus. But go for it. Fuck it. Have fun.
Why not?
Enjoy yourself.
Yes, we should be encouraging this.
But if you can find a trash Triumph Rocket 3, I think that's got to make big power too, right?
Well, exactly, because you think about it. Just the sheer capacity of that engine, it's going to have a bit of torque.
Yeah.
Where bike motors generally don't.
I mean, it's a bigger displacement than the NB motor.
Yeah.
But
it's a 3, so it might still fit in. I don't know.
It might fit. Who cares? If not, just throw a Honda case in.
Dante 015.
Yeah.
Try it.
Let us know how it goes.
Yeah, Mike likes
Freddie
it.
Skeets says, I'm in the UK and I've been driving for 2 years now. What do you recommend for 1,500 pounds to 6,000 pounds? Fun to drive, but somewhat usable and won't kill me, and cheapish insurance.
Ooh.
You know the UK market, Richard. This is your question.
I don't know. I mean, for
that's
that kind of money,
you could get
like an old 106 Rally. They're great.
A Peugeot 106 Rally?
Yeah,
okay.
And they're fun to drive. You won't kill me. Well, I mean, you know, anything could kill you.
If we were in America, I would say get a 2000 Honda Civic Si Coupe. That's what I would say in America. But you guys don't. It doesn't work like that.
Yeah. Hey, I'll tell you what you could get for that money, which is an underrated fun car, is that the last Celica that we got. Or Celica, I guess you'd say. Didn't you?
Is that the angular one?
Angular one, yeah.
Yeah.
And with the 190 engine in it, it was surprisingly nice.
Okay.
Quite light.
Can you get one for under 6,000 pounds?
Oh, God, I'd imagine so. Or that generation of MR2, the third generation MR2. Mind you, I mean, they're a bit frisky. Evo had one as a long-termer, and I borrowed it for the weekend. And they forgot to tell me as they waved me off on a Friday evening, have fun, have a great weekend. I was going away somewhere, and I was like, oh, brilliant, convertible car, fantastic. I was going away on my own to meet some mates, because that car had no trunk, so it's fine. Sort of had all my stuff on the passenger seat. Off I went. Bye, see you on Monday. And they'd forgotten to mention the back tyres were basically pulled. And that car was a bit of a handful at the best of times. I almost span it in London on my way out of the city.
It sounds like this Freddie would learn how to drive really well on that.
Yeah, cheapish insurance, that's the only thing. But I reckon it's hard to say, isn't it? I don't know. Insurance is a nightmare.
I mean, how expensive could the insurance be on a 5,000-pound car?
Well, exactly. But if he's got a budget of $6,000, then he's put a grand aside for the first year's insurance.
There you go.
There we go.
Problem solved. There you go. Peugeot 106 Toyota Celica. Do it. Tyler says, I read your Road and Track article about your Safari and I loved it. It's now inspired me to do a similar build to my 69 Mustang. So this guy,
69 Mustang Safari car.
He wants to do a build on a 69 Mustang.
Oh, look at
to
that.
Make it off-road. And
holy
I am
incredible.
With you, sir.
Wow.
100% do an off-road 69 Mustang. All of these look perfect.
Now, have you had people bitching at you for bastardizing an old 911?
Not me directly, but the internet has spoken, and some of the internet is not pleased, but I don't give a fuck.
Well, because I look at that and I go, oh, I bet that upsets Mustang purists. But then what you've got to remember about those old Mustangs, and the same is true of old 911s, they're not actually rare cars.
They're not.
There's a lot
of them around. You can buy anyone. I think anyone can buy you can find anything you want, right?
Hmm.
Get in, like, people who complain about ruining a car or whatever when they're not, like, in the game. Like, I didn't come and ruin your fucking car.
Yeah.
Like, go buy one.
It's a format for a show.
If you want to be the preserver of 911s, fucking open a museum and fill it with 911s.
Yeah.
I will never be the guy to tell you not to do that.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But, like, by the way, my car drives awesome.
Does it? Now, again, it's a sign of getting old, but I have for some time been quite obsessed with cars that ride properly. Is the ride nice?
Yes.
It
rides well, and I can go full throttle over speed bumps, and it's beautiful.
Good.
I'm sorry it's not here now, but next time you come back to America,
really like to see it.
You'll have a go in it, and it's fucking great. And I think this dude's 69 Mustang off-road car will be sweet. There's a guy in Rally America who raced a rally IROC, who had a fucking Rally America. Let me find it. Where it was? Oh, here it is. This yes. guy. This is an actual. This is a competition rally vehicle that I watched race. And this thing was cool as fuck.
Have they photoshopped out his arm out the window firing a pistol into right. the air? Because that is the most American thing I've ever seen.
I think, you know, if you did this exact thing with the fog lights on your Mustang, I think it would look rowdy as can be. And this guy did well. This guy did really well, too. Look, here he is. Here he is.
Yes.
This is a legit guy. He took this thing very seriously, and his car wow. did well. It was fucking great. It was very well. Fun. I recommend
God bless
it.
You, sir.
What the fuck? Come back. Yeah, do that. Okay, where are we at here? Do we get the new Suzuki Jimny in the U.S.? No, we do
no,
not.
There was one here in L.A., though, last
week. Yeah, they had one there. as a demo car. Have you been around one?
We did a whole, we did a whole Smith & Sniff with it, and we got, like, I think it's our most watched video, actually.
Well, it's like a viral car.
Yeah.
But I don't think it would sell in America.
No, it's too small.
Yeah. Did you enjoy it, though?
Comically small. Yeah, I absolutely adored it. I liked it more than reason. I still can't figure out why I liked it so much. It's just got personality.
It's charming. Although someone rightfully said on Twitter, if you're upset about the Jimny not coming here, just buy a Jeep Renegade and shut up. which now that I think about it, is like, yeah, he's got a point.
I thought you were
going
to say they said, just buy a Mercedes G-Wagon and park it further from your house. Oh, look at that tiny car. No, it's just far away, mate.
That's funny.
Because it is. But I don't really like the G-Wagon, even the new one. I'm
not a big fan.
I can't get on with it. I don't know. Because the thing is, it's one of those cars that car journalists wank themselves senseless over, which they do with the Jimny as well. Yeah. I'm guilty of that.
My friend Johnny Lieberman into a corner and just looks at pictures of G-Wagons. I know. He cranks them out.
He's a proper G-Wagon
He's obsessed
pervert,
with them.
Isn't he? It's disgusting.
Something about, I think, visiting the factory of those is like a it's like an iconic experience of some kind, going to the factory. No, I don't give a shit, but... I don't know. I like the door sound. The door thunk is great.
Except that's what I don't like about that brand new one is they've put that in and they know full well how to make doors that close quietly and softly, but they've had to engineer it to be worse.
Yeah, that's Harley Davidson complex.
Yes.
They built a better motorcycle and people went, you're going to have to go fuck yourself with that. Can you make them shitty again, please?
Yeah. And that's the thing with the G-Wagon. It's just like they're sort of, and that's, it's so un-Mercedes, you know, they're sort of relentless in their pursuit of technology and perfection. And yet for this, they have this little rush of blood to the head and they, A, make it retro, and they're not generally very retro as a car company.
No.
The SLS and stuff.
The SLS was mildly retro, but
mostly
in general,
they're future looking.
Yeah.
And then they do this sort of funny, idiotic, exceptionally expensive 4x4 that is willfully worse than it could be.
It's all about the margins, bruh.
But also, what I think it exposes about car journalism generally is that all these people who crap on about handling, sort of, you know, the kind of nuances of handling, and that's why we voted the blank over the blank, because
that's why the Giulia won anything.
Yes, because it's on limit a steering feel and a lack of tread shuffle when you're in a constant state to high speed corners really made it the winner here, and then. All these car journalists who've sort of agonized over this kind of stuff that people really won't ever experience. They'll go, oh, I love a G-Wagon. You go, but it handles like toss. So you're basically admitting that handling isn't that important. You unwittingly just undermined your own Tillemanship, sir.
Somebody wrote an article last year that was like, how to be a British car journalist. And one of the steps was, you know, you say that the last version was shit, but then they changed, you know, they added half a millimeter of toe out to this one, and all of a sudden the handling is spectacular.
Yes. There's a lot of that goes on.
Yeah. So Jimny, thumbs up?
No, I absolutely adore it. I really do. In fact, oh God, no, I can't say. There was something I was going to say, and I can't because it's going to blow a surprise.
On the Grand Tour?
No.
Oh.
Something else entirely. Okay. I'll tell you
That's
afterwards.
That's okay. Keep I'm it really to yourself sorry. For now.
Yeah.
Tease it. Thomas Harrison Lord from England says, is Richard working on more books for next year, and where do you find the motivation to write so much? You write a lot.
I don't think I do. Do I?
I think you do. I think the people who do write a lot think it's not a lot, but it really is.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Maybe I should write less. Because I'm fundamentally really lazy. So, but that's the thing. Funny enough, when I did the Roy Lanchester book, that was me, a rare thing of me deliberately like kicking my own ass and to not be lazy.
How long did it take you to write that book?
Well, fits and starts, because what happened was I kind of decided it was a good idea, wrote some notes, then put them in a drawer and didn't think about it for like 2 years. And then when my daughter was born last year, I was staying up late to do a little bottle feed in the middle of the night, And I had all this spare time. I was just sitting up watching TV. And I was like, this is a waste of time. I should do something productive. So I started writing. Made myself like write an hour a night. And that's how I got started. The problem is then you get in deep and it's like, yeah. Right, I've done about 2/3 of this book. I basically need to finish it. And that last third was harder work. Because by then, that routine of staying up late to bottle feed my daughter had changed. I wasn't doing it. So I had to make time to write, which is always... I'm really fascinated by, because you know, I kind of, that's what I do for a living. I write stuff. And I'm always fascinated by other people's, how they write.
Yeah.
Because I always assume I'm doing it wrong. And so, you know, there's a lot of that stuff where you can read about, like, famous writers' processes.
Yeah, their processes.
And I'm obsessed with reading those, because I'm always like, oh, how did Hemingway do it? I went to Hemingway's house in Key West.
He drank a bottle of rum.
Yes, exactly. He went and fought in the Spanish Civil War.
Pet a three-toed cat yes. for a while.
Well, that's it. So I went to his house in Key West where those three-toed cats are.
I think they're six-toed or three-toed. How many toes do they have? It's the wrong number.
It's the wrong number,
it's six. Yeah. I think it's six-toed.
And they let you into his little office there, and he's got his typewriter there. And they said, and Hemingway used to come up here and he'd write 400 words a day. And I was like, what a lazy bastard. That's like half a column for Evo. I do that in a morning. But
Hemingway's cats have six toes, in case you care. And he wrote 400 words a day
yeah.
while fucking blackout right. drunk.
Then got blackout drunk and went marlin fishing or whatever. What a life. So, yeah, I am quite idle, but I suppose I do churn out nonsense. Am I working on any more books? Yeah, I've got a book. I'm starting on a book next month, which I'll be writing for however long it takes, and then it's out later in the year, which is going to be about F1.
Nice.
Nothing to do with telly, just about Formula One.
Oh, right.
But it's a joke one, obviously. It's not joke serious. Formula One book. Yeah, it's not Adrian Newey's book, which is brilliant, by the
is
way.
Is it? Should I get that one?
Yes.
I tried to read Jackie Stewart's book. It was fucking unreadable.
Jackie Stewart.
It was 900 pages of him fucking learning to play bagpipes. I'm like, fuck, brother.
Are you just being racist about
shooting quails, yeah. Like 300 pages on shooting quails. I don't care.
Do you know what Jackie Stewart used to do there? Because he was under contract to Ford for years, like from the late 60s, maybe certainly early 70s. And so all of the other sort of early 70s hotshot drivers who had like Muras and Bernard of Boxsters, and Jackie Stewart had a Ford Granada because he got it for free. But then he used to turn up to, they would get him along and they'd have like a prototype of, you know, the next Escort or something.
Yeah.
And he would come along and give his feedback.
Yeah.
Because he's a smart guy and he was smart enough to go that if he came along and absolutely door handled the thing and then went, oh no, you need to adjust the toe in, then customers don't care about that. He used to come along and I think probably the engineers would be like, oh brilliant, Jackie Stewart's going to drive us around. It's going to be amazing. And he'd drive around at 30 and he'd go, now, this button is quite hard to see from this driving position. And he was all about that. He was all about
ergonomics
customer stuff.
And
yeah.
Stuff.
Apparently he was obsessed with all this sort of customer experience. Yeah.
And tartan.
Yeah.
His trousers are really upsetting. Says, would you rather have a brand new S-Class or a low mileage Rolls-Royce Ghost for the same price?
Ooh.
Ghost does nothing for me.
Really?
Not a thing. I like the Dawn. I like the Wraith.
Right.
Ghost, nope. I see way too much 7 Series BMW in the Ghost.
No. Now, you see, I would say that basically it's like, do you want... Brand new S-Class is like the nicest room in a mid-priced hotel. A Ghost is the cheapest room in an amazing hotel.
Okay.
And even the cheapest room in an amazing hotel would give you a more memorable experience.
Probably true.
Because you can go down to the bar.
Probably true. I'm spoiled. That's why I'm not that into the Ghost.
Yeah, that is a great sorry, car journalist.
If you're less
thing.
Spoiled, yeah. You're it's not, like, yeah, but Ghost.
You sort of roll up in something like a Ghost.
You know
ghost.
What I'd rather have? Can I add a third one into there? I'd rather have a 2011 Phantom.
Oh.
If you want to play that game,
ooh.
I'd rather have a 2011 Phantom with low miles than any of that.
Yes.
The Phantom is what's up. When you drive a Phantom, it's like a Ghost drives like a really nice 7 Series. A Phantom drives like nothing else in the world. It's
true.
Like sailing.
True dat.
Aaron says, quick word of appreciation from Ireland. Have a pint on me. Nope. Thank you very much, Aaron. Last question, and then we end the show. Richard, is there any chance the trio, meaning Jeremy, Richard, and James, can come on the TST podcast? I'm just going to throw out a no. They don't give a fuck about this guy. They have real promotion to do.
They I bet hate even... doing promotions so much.
Yeah.
They really hate it.
I mean, granted, as far as promotion goes, this is more fun than most, but I'm going to just answer that for him and say that's probably not fucking happening. Smith and Sniff is on YouTube. Like and subscribe.
Like and subscribe.
Like
it's
and subscribe.
Two British car nerds talking nonsense in a car.
It works good. And, of course, sniffpetrol.com.
Yes. I don't know. I presume, like, most people listen to your show. Are they in the US or you're all over the world?
Our top, and basically it's like 75% North America, but right. we also have the remaining 25% is like UK, Australia, New Zealand. It's like wherever English is spoken, we do okay. Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so I'm sort of the other way around. So it's like, I think, probably 75% at least UK readers yeah. the site. So it's quite UK-centric, but I always think I should try harder to make it more accessible to other people.
I don't think it's inaccessible.
No, probably not.
No, you're good. You're good, man.
I'm worrying too much about it.
You're good, man. Follow me on Instagram. And, of course, are you Sniff Petrol on Instagram as well?
Sniff underscore
Sniff
Petrol.
There's another Sniff Petrol.
Yeah, and it's just some random
guy.
You.
Yeah,
hey,
yeah.
This happened to me. Did I tell you this last time I was here? You know Piston Heads, the British website? On their forum, there was somebody whose username was Sniff Petrol. And this was years ago. And I was a bit like, well, that's weird, because people might think it's me. So I messaged him and I went, mate, why are you Sniff Petrol? And he went, oh, I just really like your website. And I was like,
it's a tribute.
But you know, it's like,
he's a tribute band.
Yeah, but it's just because you really like something. It's like, I really like Samuel L. Jackson, but I wouldn't go around on the internet going, hi, I'm Samuel L. Jackson, official.
Here's your Instagram.
Yeah, it's just
pictures of cars.
As you'll notice.
It's lovely, though. But pictures of cars in England.
Yeah.
And no, an E34 in a field.
That's in Italy, though. So it's not all in England, you see. Yeah.
Yeah.
I started off because I didn't know what to do with Instagram. So I started off and I thought as a joke, because all I saw on Instagram was people constantly putting pictures of Lamborghinis and things up. So I thought, I'll just put the shittest
worst.
Cars possible.
Yeah.
So if you go down to the very first cars I posted, look, that's a Rover Metro. That's a Peugeot 1007 with a dent in it. That's an arty shot of a Nissan Almera, a Nissan Primera, Peugeot 205. They're quite nice, though. And then I got a bit bored of that. So the cars start to get a bit more interesting.
But
not that. I mean, there's still like.
There's still like a random. Like, what the fuck is this?
That's a Ford Sierra Estate, sir. That's also in Italy.
Jesus.
I know.
You do better.
I might have mentioned this before, but I am quite nerdy about cars.
Yeah, you are super nerdy. Follow me on Instagram. Y'all know who that is, The Smoking Tire. I post nerdy things like, look. The rear tire, spare tire mount on an 04 Cayenne Turbo.
And I saw that.
I have not seen this in years.
I forgot that was an official thing.
I haven't seen one of these in such a long time.
It's that the chrome is a
and
nice touch. And
factory
as well.
19-inch chromes. You know, these wheels only existed. Here's some, because my dad had an 04 Cayenne Turbo in this color, but no spare tire rack. These wheels only existed because this car came with 21-inch tires from the factory, the sport tires.
Right.
Which at the time, 21s and 04 were like, holy shit.
Yeah, yeah.
And it was impossible to get a winter tire in a 21. Nobody made one. So to get winter tires, you had to go to the 19s, which was this.
Right.
And he had to buy a set of these wheels. He was fucking pissed. Anyway, Richard Porter. Oh, there we go. Richard Porter, thank you for coming in, sir.
Thank you for having me.
I appreciate your time. I hope you enjoy Arizona more than the people who live there do.
Meth labs.
All right, cool. That Smoking Tire podcast is powered by Shout Engine. Get your own damn podcast at shoutengine.com. It's easy. All you need is a microphone, a connection to the internet, and ideally something to say. Merry Christmas, y'all. I will see you next time. Bye.